technology. Yes, that's right.
Okay, Sheriff.
You want paper detail? No.
Sheriff.
Kenny, don't say that.
Oh, okay.
Exactly. There you go. I know last night at the water sewer concern, the county is talking about releasing the bighorn sheep.
He's going to know. He's going to know.
Hey, Kenny, you meet expectations.
But after so much progress.
Yeah, there you go.
More people take a picture of the sign.
Yeah, I mean, and it's up to you, because you did do well. The only thing I mentioned on the interview,
you know, flashing signs
is the one we were talking about.
Mobile signs.
I mentioned, I said, I said, how did they get, I said, it was dancing so hard.
No, it's not that unusual.
No, it's not.
He almost brought her to the floor.
Something dies for lack of a second, can be brought back to a meeting. Doesn't have to be agendized again.
Yeah, and she's going to agendize it.
Surprised that the agency doesn't use seconds. And that's probably why.
Well, all it does is tell them the body that when another member is interested in having a debate on there, and if you're forced to be at a debate, you don't use seconds.
Larry, I'm going to go ahead and get started.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Shelley Aldean. I'll be substituting for the mayor this morning. He is, in Panama enjoying himself, and we wish him well and look forward to seeing him sometime next week. Today is Thursday, November 17th, 2011. This is a meeting of the Carson City Board of Supervisors. We're here in the CR room at the Community Center. And Alan, could you please call the roll to determine a quorum?
Supervisor Abowd.
Here.
Supervisor McKenna.
Here.
Supervisor Wald.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Aldean.
Here.
You have a quorum present, madam.
Thank you. Next item on the agenda is the invocation. We have Al Tistra here from the Seventh-day Adventist Church. Al, thank you for joining us this morning, and perhaps you can get us off on the right foot with an inspiring invocation.
Eternal God, grant to the members and officers of this body a sacred moment of quiet before they take up the duties of this day. Let them not think when this prayer is said that their dependence on you is over and forget your counsels for the rest of the day. Rather, from these moments of holy quiet, may there come such a sweetness of disposition that all may know that you are in this room. So help us all today through your presence. Amen.
Amen. Thank you all very much. And Ken, would you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. Next on the agenda is public comment. The public is invited at this time to comment on or discuss. I will
begin again. This is the time for public comment. The public is invited at this time to comment on and discuss any topic that is relevant to or within the authority of the Carson City Board of Supervisors, the Carson City Liquor and Entertainment Board, the Carson City Redevelopment Authority, and the Carson City Board of Health. If you are commenting on an item that is agendized for consideration this morning, we would encourage you to wait and make your comments during that particular item because it will have more relevance at that time. Is there any public comment? Maurice is saying no. Okay. All right. With that, we'll go ahead and close public comment. Move on to the next item, which is approval of the minutes of October 20th, 2011. Does any member of the board have any comments, suggested changes? I'm sorry, I do that. Is there any comments from a member of the audience? Seeing none, would somebody care to make a motion to approve as presented?
I move to approve the minutes of October 20th, 2011.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Adoption of the agenda.
There are no changes, ma'am.
No changes. We'll deem the agenda adopted then. Moving on to the next item, which is a special presentation. Is Lynette Conrad here? I presume she is. If you'd join me at the podium, Lynette, that would be wonderful. All right, this is a proclamation for National Parental Involvement Day, November 17th, 2011, whereas the community of Carson City realizes that the future depends on today's youth who will become tomorrow's leaders, and whereas creating a sound education platform is the key to producing the next generation of conscientious, innovative, productive, and successful citizens, and whereas research indicates that students who have involved families get higher grades, have fewer discipline problems, and are more likely to be successful throughout their entire lives, and whereas it is important to create an environment where learning takes place not just in the classroom, but becomes a central part of family life, where parents and all members of our community play an active role in our children's education, and whereas the community of Carson City supports the goals of National Parental Involvement Day and recognizes that when parents and members of our community work together for the common purpose of educating our youth, that our children are more likely to succeed not only in school, but in all aspects of their lives. Now, therefore, Robert L. Kroll, Mayor of Carson City, Nevada, and the members of the Carson City Board of Supervisors do hereby proclaim Thursday, the 17th of November, as National Parental Involvement Day, and urge the citizens of our community to work toward the common purpose of creating a platform for success for our children. And here is the proclamation, Lynette, and would you care to say a few words?
Sure. Thank you, Supervisor Aldean and Supervisors. I think Supervisor Aldean said it all right here in this proclamation. So thank you so much for taking time from your busy agenda. And thanks for all that you guys do to make Carson City a great place to raise our children. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, next item on the agenda is the consent agenda, consisting of three items. Does any member of the board or any member of the public wish to have an item removed from the consent agenda and heard separately? All right, seeing none, would somebody care to make a motion to approve the consent agenda as posted? And if you could acknowledge the reappointment of our appointee to the Advisory Board of Management Wildlife, that would be wonderful. Go ahead, Molly.
So I move to approve 9-1 finance to accept a report on the condition of each fund in the Treasury through November 8, 2011 per NRS 251.030. 9-2, two items from the city manager to ratify the approval of bills and other requests for payments by the city manager for the period of October 12, 2011 through November 8, 2011. And item B, to appoint Stan Zuber to the Advisory Board of Management Wildlife for a term that expires July 2014. And thank you to Stan for stepping up.
Okay, thank you. Is there a second? Okay, any comments on the question? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Next item on the agenda is 11, the city manager, and the presentation of the Carson City Quarterly Business Review. And Linda, I assume you'll be handling that for us.
That's what I'm here for. You have, we'll get it up on the screen. You have in front of you the Quarterly Business Review, and you may notice it looks different now. It's a little prettier than it used to be. We did get an upgrade in the software that we use for this program. for all of our performance management programs. So we're able to upgrade the way this looks for the public. Now, remind you, this is posted on our website each quarter. This is brought to you on a quarterly basis. So let me go ahead and run through these. Stop me at any time that you have questions or comments or would like additional information. And if you see information that you would like to have included in this, be sure and bring it up. Okay, because we're starting to work down into the program level, creating databases of information and performance information, and we have quite a bit of information at our fingertips now. So let me go ahead and go through this. First of all, we start with an introduction, and you can see there is a table of contents, and those chapters are based on our quality of life perspective. So in that way, the presentation is the same as it has been in the past. First, we'll talk about a safe and secure community. Residents and visitors are safe in structures. Really, we see this as being consistent. One thing I want to draw your attention to is trend lines. Those trend lines tell us how we're doing over time. We usually try to get a 2 to 3 year period of data in order to really set that trend. We had one incident in July of 2011. Before that, August 2010 was the last time. The next has to do with people traveling throughout Carson City. We do monitor traffic accidents. Total traffic accidents are doing very well. They are down about 14% from the same period as we compare it to the last 3 years. One category, though, that we are seeing an increase in is injury accidents, and I'll draw your attention to you can see property damage has gone down. First, let me show you something. Property damage is the biggest percentage of the traffic accidents. Those are the fender benders. We don't see anybody being injured. The blue section is accidents with injury. So you can see the magnitude of each of those. Injury accidents, and if you look at this green line, that is the actual number of injury accidents. This brown line is what the average has been over the last 3 years. So you can see it has trended up continually for quite some time. We haven't been able to really pinpoint an area. I know that the Sheriff's Office and Transportation looked at it, and really the accidents are happening in residential areas. And so there's nothing that we have been able to pinpoint that we can really react to. We're going to continue to monitor it. Public Works, the Sheriff's Office continues to take a look at this, and we will see what happens as time goes forward. A new measure that we're now tracking is claims filed for injury or accident that occurs on our sidewalks, paths, trails. We did have one earlier in the year. Nothing since then. This is relatively new. Safe from criminal activity. We have an index. The sheriff has produced an index, crimes against persons. This is UCR crimes against persons. And you can see what the breakdown is. The simple assaults are the largest category of crimes against persons. That's the blue. Something unique this quarter is the red, which is homicide, and that's the IHOP incident. So we hope never to see red on this chart again, but that is there this time because of that.
Linda, I'm sorry, I should have stopped you before you proceeded, but under claims filed for injuries reported in parks on bike paths and sidewalks,
yes.
Are you characterizing the shared travelways on streets as bike paths? Or
these are
dedicated bike
paths? To my understanding, it's sidewalks, just the sidewalks.
Just the dedicated bike paths.
Yeah, and the paths. Because anything, if it happens in the street, I'm not sure if that would be considered a traffic accident.
I don't know we've thought that through that way.
Yeah.
I'll have to check with the sheriff and see how we might want to do that. So we'll work with traffic and sheriff office and figure out what's the best way to report that.
But this was designated just for pathways and sidewalks. We were looking at streets through our traffic, but really hadn't really looked at the pathways.
Well, okay. On the crimes against persons, the shooting incident in Carson City. Since it's such an aberration, could it be removed? Should it be removed from this? What I'm thinking of is somebody sees these statistics and they say, oh, Carson City has a violent aspect to it. And I'm hoping it will never happen again. I don't know what benefit it has being on here since we all know about it. And it was an aberration. Think about it.
From a statistical standpoint, you want to stay consistent and report everything that you have. Of course, it would be, for example, on this chart here, you're going to see a blip there, and then, hopefully we will see it flat the rest of the time. So we can certainly take a look at it and see if we want to remove that as a one-time, very unusual circumstance.
Yeah, I'm not trying to hide anything. I'm just thinking of economic development and people looking at the community as a place to live.
Well, and when you look, though, if you look at this chart and the trend going down, I mean, crimes against person has been going down for some time. So we're really doing quite well. We had that one instance, but even with that one instance, our trend continues down.
Possibly we could show that in the comment section that was a one singular incident.
Certainly.
Like that would, you know, if we can't remove it altogether, then.
Just a real brief comment, Kenny Furlong, Sheriff. That would make your reporting inconsistent with the statewide reporting. That would be the problem.
No, that's true.
And you would have a conflict that we wouldn't be able to explain. The reporting that you're seeing up on the screen is done statewide and nationally in this format, and that simple assault factor is there. So if somebody looked at your reports, what the board views, and then compared it to this to the national UCR stats, they would differ dramatically.
Okay, if you just think about it, because I'd rather answer the question than have somebody reject us because they don't ask the question.
I understand completely.
Thank you, Ken. Linda, under staff comments, I noticed that's
there's a piece missing, and in those comments, I did make reference to the IHOP incidents. Okay. I'm not sure.
All right. You omitted that as an accommodation to John, I think, probably.
Yeah, Well, I wanted to make sure that he had a comment to make, certainly. So, no, I'm not sure what happened to my comment on that. We've had a few issues with this new software. So the next is safe from criminal activity. A couple things that we measure, and these are workload issues, is calls for service for the sheriff as well as emergency response times. And the emergency response times, you can see, are going down. We had a little we were trending down on the calls for service. It's increased a little bit this last couple months, and we'll watch that. Property is secure from criminal activity. This is, again, another index that the sheriff has developed, crimes against property. For this, we're comparing it to the prior year, and you can see that we are trending down in all categories. We've provided a pie chart to show what categories are the largest categories. And you can see what they've done over time. This is property is safe from damage. We monitor the calls for service for the fire department as well as their response times. One thing I'll note, in the past reports I provided response times in seconds. I've converted those to minutes for the average resident. You know, the seconds, don't make me do the math, please. Let's just take a look at how many minutes it takes on average. You can see we see an increase in the response times over time, and we have not really dug down to find out if it's in one area. I'm working with the fire department right now, and we're starting to develop some of those performance measures based on the fire station and finding out if some of those response times are an issue in one area versus another area. So we're going to start really looking at those.
Linda, is there any value in differentiating with respect to calls for service between calls that are not emergency versus calls that are legitimate emergencies?
These are just emergency. Okay. We have three classes of emergency calls with the fire department. But we're going to really be able to break down those calls, and I'll talk a little bit about that when I get to the ambulance, but really start breaking down what type of calls they are. Okay. So that if we see, for example, in this case, you know, we're seeing a slight trend up on our response times. Let's find out which area. Is it a particular area of town where we're having those issues? You know, is it a resource issue in one of our stations?
Do we keep track of the difference, though? But, you know, obviously in some communities there's a real problem with abusing 911. Mm-hmm. People use it without giving thought to the nature of their alleged emergency. And that can be very burdensome to our first responders. Is there any evidence that 911 is being abused?
Yeah, every 911 call that comes in, there's a protocol that the dispatchers go through to determine whether or not it's a real emergency call, mm-hmm. or is it just a call for service? Is it an assistance, a community aid kind of thing? Mm-hmm. You know, if somebody that's in has mobility problems, that falls out of bed or falls out of a chair, we'll get calls for that and we'll send somebody over to help them, but that won't be classified as an emergency mm-hmm. response. They do that as the calls come in. They're automatically doing that all the time.
Okay, Larry, so my assumption is that people are not abusing 911.
No, in fact, they try to encourage them to use the 911 system because that then creates a record of the call. And even though it may not be a non-emergency, it's still not a bad idea to use that. But I don't think, Sheriff, I don't think we're getting abuse of the 911 system from what I'm hearing.
Certainly, again, Sheriff, certainly there are some. There's no question about it. We run about a 14 to 15% average per month of calls coming into the center that are emergency 911 calls. That has not varied significantly over the last 8 years.
Good. Okay. Thank you, Ken.
Linda, one question. Is there a correlation or can you determine a correlation if reduction in staff is causing the increase in response times?
We haven't dug into that. That's one of the things we need to do. Is
a one singular incident.
Certainly.
Something like that that would, you know, if we can't remove it altogether, then.
Just a real brief comment, Kenny Furlong, Sheriff. That would make your reporting inconsistent with the statewide reporting. That would be the problem.
No, that's true.
And you would have a conflict that we wouldn't be able to explain. The reporting that you're seeing up on the screen is done statewide and nationally in this format, and that simple assault factor is there. So if somebody looked at your reports, what the board views, and they compared it to this to the national UCR stats, they would differ dramatically.
Okay, if you just think about it, because I'd rather answer the question than have somebody reject us because they don't ask the question.
I understand completely.
Thank you, Ken. Linda, under staff comments, I noticed that's
there's a piece missing, and in those comments, I did make reference to the IHOP incidents. Okay. I'm not sure.
All right. You omitted that as an accommodation to John, I think, probably.
Yeah, I wanted to make sure that he had a comment to make, certainly. So, no, I'm not sure what happened to my comment on that. We've had a few issues with this new software. So the next is safe from criminal activity. A couple things that we measure, and these are workload issues, is calls for service for the sheriff as well as emergency response times. And the emergency response times, you can see, are going down. We had a little, we were trending down on the calls for service. It's increased a little bit this last couple months, and we'll watch that. Property is secure from criminal activity. This is, again, another index that the sheriff has developed of crimes against property. For this, we're comparing it to the prior year, and you can see that we are trending down in all categories. We've provided a pie chart to show what categories are the largest categories, and you can see what they've done over time. This is property is safe from damage. We monitor the calls for service for the fire department as well as their response times. One thing I'll note, in the past reports I provided response times in seconds. I've converted those to minutes for the average resident. The seconds, don't make me do the math, please. Let's just take a look at how many minutes it takes on average. You can see we see an increase in the response times over time, and we have not really dug down to find out if it's in one area. I'm working with the fire department right now, and we're starting to develop some of those performance measures based on the fire station and finding out if some of those response times are an issue in one area versus another area. So we're going to start really looking at those.
Linda, is there any value in differentiating with respect to calls for service between calls that are not emergency versus calls that are legitimate emergencies?
These are just emergency.
These
are just emergency. Okay. We have three classes of emergency calls with the fire department. But we're going to really be able to break down those calls, and I'll talk a little bit about that when I get to the ambulance, but really start breaking down what type of calls they are.
Okay.
So that if we see, for example, in this case, we're seeing a slight trend up on our response times. Let's find out which area. Is it a particular area of town where we're having those issues? Is it a resource issue in one of our stations?
Do we keep track of the difference, though? Obviously, in some communities, there's a real problem with abusing 911.
Mm-hmm.
People use it without giving thought to the nature of their alleged emergency, and that can be very burdensome to our first responders. Is there any evidence that 911 is being abused?
Yeah, every 911 call that comes in, there's a protocol that the dispatchers go through to determine whether or not it's a real emergency call,
mm-hmm.
or is it just a call for service? Is it an assistance, a community aid kind of thing?
Mm-hmm.
If somebody that's in has mobility problems, that falls out of bed or falls out of a chair, we'll get calls for that, and we'll send somebody over to help them, but that won't be classified as an emergency
mm-hmm.
response. They do that as the calls come in. They're automatically doing that all the
okay,
time.
Okay, Larry, so. my assumption is that people are not abusing 911.
No, in fact, they try to encourage them to use the 911 system because that then creates a record of the call. And even though it may not be a non-emergency, it's still not a bad idea to use that. But I don't think, Sheriff, I don't think we're getting abuse of the 911 system from what I'm hearing.
Certainly there are some. There's no question about it. We run about a 14 to 15% average per month of calls coming into the center that are emergency 911 calls. That has not varied significantly over the last 8 years.
Good. Okay. Thank you, Ken.
Linda, one question. Is there a correlation or can you determine a correlation if reduction in staff is causing the increase in response times?
We haven't dug into that. And that's one of the things we need to do is really break it down by station and area, find out where that response time issue is, take a look at the staffing associated with that station, and then we can really get into the details. Okay.
And just to answer that also, that has come up, and we are, like Linda says, we are evaluating that. Because if we depend more and more on our mutual aid, then our response times are delayed because it just simply takes longer for outside agencies to get to us. So,
and we are developing a way of tracking that mutual aid, and we plan, that was one of the new measures we're working on to bring to you also so you can see how much we depend on other counties, and also we do extend assistance to other counties as well. Now we're going to move into healthy communities. We do monitor, and you'll see this when you meet as the Board of Health. We monitor diseases in the community. Influenza, we had a little bump early last year. We'll see what happens this year, but all in all, it's down, and mainly because in September of 2009, we really had a jump there. Reported diseases as far as non-vaccine preventable, we did have the jump early in the year with RSV. We haven't seen that come back, and we hope that that doesn't happen. Reported sexually transmitted communicable diseases. We were seeing some really good results earlier in the year, but it's gone back up again just recently. Vaccine preventable diseases, we haven't had any, or vector-borne, so that's good news. One thing, let me stop and just note, our new reporting system allows us to give you the default, which is the month actual to target, and give you an indicator. If it's green, it means we're meeting our target. The quarter-to-date, the year-to-date, the fiscal quarter, which is the same, and the fiscal year-to-date. So it gives you more summary information so you can compare a year-to-date versus a quarter-to-date and see if maybe year-to-date we're doing well, but this quarter we're seeing some changes in those trends. So it's a pretty handy tool. Water and sanitation services. We are one thing that I just want to bring to your attention. We do monitor our water quality tests. Our target, of course, is to meet all 100% of our water quality tests. We had a little bit of an issue in the summer with arsenic, which, because we depend so much heavily on well water in the summer, that's not a terrible surprise. And with the pipeline project coming in, that should eliminate that from happening in the future. Community health services. We monitor the different types of services and give you a total, and we compare that to what the services have been for the last 6 months. You can see we're seeing somewhat of a flat trend as far as our services. The largest service that we provide is vaccinations. Second to that is our birth control. But we are staying within what we feel that we can provide with our current staff. Ambulance services, we continue to see that calls for ambulance go up. You can see quite a big increase since about last winter. We saw quite a jump in that. The good news is, despite that call, that increase, we see those response times are actually improving. So that's good news. Families in need are offered short-term assistance and provided resources to become self-supportive. This is some new measures. Before, we would provide you emergency assistance numbers, and Supervisor Aldean, I believe you asked, could we get something that really tells a little bit more about what we're doing as far as homelessness, housing, and long-term self-supportive services for those in need. So I'm going to go over some new ones. This is one action item on your agenda to approve these new measures. The first is a homeless count. As people come in to ask for assistance, they're asked about their housing situation. And from that, we have been able to develop a count of how many people are homeless. We actually track it. Adults, children, we also track it. Are you living with somebody else? Are you living in a hotel? Or are you truly just on the street? So we have some really good information having to do with that.
Linda, you know, and I appreciate you including that. Under staff comments, though, or incorporated as a footnote, however you choose to do it, Yeah, I think the rule of thumb is if you are living in a motel for 3 months out of a 12-month period, you are deemed to be homeless. Mm-hmm. It's not that I don't want to give people the false impression that these people are on the street, you know,
right.
sleeping
no,
in alleyways.
Right, no, that's very true.
You
know, no, that's so, very true. So there's very few that are there. There's quite a few that live with other people.
Right. Right. And I think we need to make note
and
of that.
So, and I will, the next report, I have a chart that shows the difference, and I can show you the percentage, and I'll make sure and include that for you. As a matter of fact, I'll go ahead and amend this report, and we will put that on there, because a good percentage of them are those people that are living with other people.
Well, and some people
really break it down by station and area, find out where that response time issue is, take a look at the staffing associated with that station, and then we can really get into the details.
And just to answer that also, that has come up, and we are, like Linda says, we are evaluating that, because if we depend more and more on our mutual aid, then our response times are delayed, because it just simply takes longer for outside agencies to get to us. So,
and we are developing a way of tracking that mutual aid, and we plan, that was one of the new measures we're working on to bring to you also, so you can see how much we depend on other counties, and also we do extend assistance to other counties as well. Now we're going to move into healthy communities. We do monitor, and you'll see this when you meet as the Board of Health. We monitor diseases in the community. Influenza, we had a little bump early last year. We'll see what happens this year, but all in all, it's down, and mainly because in September of 2009, we really had a jump there. Reported diseases as far as non-vaccine preventable, we did have the jump early in the year with RSV. We haven't seen that come back, and we hope that that doesn't happen. Reported sexually transmitted communicable diseases. We were seeing some really good results earlier in the year, but it's gone back up again just recently. Vaccine preventable diseases, we haven't had any, or vector-borne, so that's good news. One thing, let me stop and just note, our new reporting system allows us to give you the default, which is the month actual to target, and give you an indicator. If it's green, it means we're meeting our target. The quarter-to-date, the year-to-date, the fiscal quarter, which is the same, and the fiscal year-to-date. So it gives you more summary information so you can compare a year-to-date versus a quarter-to-date and see if maybe year-to-date we're doing well, but this quarter we're seeing some changes in those trends. So it's a pretty handy tool. Water and sanitation services. We are one thing that I just want to bring to your attention, we do monitor our water quality tests. Our target, of course, is to meet all 100% of our water quality tests. We had a little bit of an issue in the summer with arsenic, which, because we depend so much heavily on well water in the summer, that's not a terrible surprise. And with the pipeline project coming in, that should eliminate that from happening in the future. Community health services. We monitor the different types of services and give you a total, and we compare that to what the services had been for the last 6 months. You can see we're seeing somewhat of a flat trend as far as our services. The largest service that we provide is vaccinations. Second to that is our birth control. But we are staying within what we feel that we can provide with our current staff. Ambulance services, we continue to see that calls for ambulance go up. You can see quite a big increase since about last winter. We saw quite a jump in that. The good news is, despite that call, that increase, we see those response times are actually improving. So that's good news. Families in need are offered short-term assistance and provided resources to become self-supportive. This is some new measures. Before, we would provide you emergency assistance numbers, and Supervisor Aldean, I believe you asked, could we get something that really tells a little bit more about what we're doing as far as homelessness, housing, and long-term self-supportive services for those in need. So I'm going to go over some new ones. This is one action item on your agenda to approve these new measures. The first is a homeless count. As people come in to ask for assistance, they're asked about their housing situation. And from that, we have been able to develop a count of how many people are homeless. We actually track it. Adults, children, we also track it. Are you living with somebody else? Are you living in a hotel? Or are you truly just on the street? So we have some really good information having to do with that.
Linda, you know, and I appreciate you including that. Under staff comments, though, or incorporated as a footnote, however you choose to do it, Yeah, I think the rule of thumb is if you are living in a motel for 3 months out of a 12-month period, you are deemed to be homeless. Mm-hmm. It's not that I don't want to give people the false impression that these people are on the street, you know,
right.
sleeping
no,
in alleyways.
Right. No, that's very true.
You know,
no, that's so, very true. So there's a very few that are there. There's quite a few that live with other people.
Right. Right. And I think we need to make note of that.
So, and I will, the next report, I have a chart that shows the difference, and I can show you the percentage, and I'll make sure and include that for you. As a matter of fact, I'll go ahead and amend this report, and we will put that on there, because a good percentage of them are those people that are living with other people.
Well, and some people have a transient lifestyle. It doesn't
sure.
mean that they're sleeping on the street. So I think
sure.
we need to make that distinction.
Sure. But we have seen that increase. But we are looking. One thing that we are also doing is providing housing-related assistance, and that's rental assistance, utility assistance. So if somebody is in their home, try to keep them there while we provide some other services. And I'll go directly to the next one, which is workforce assistance. A very busy area.
On the reporting of homeless,
mm-hmm.
is FISH and the other social welfare nonprofits, are they in this statistic?
No. These are just folks that come to our human services department.
Okay. Think about we may want to contact Salvation Army, FISH, et cetera, and have them report.
Yeah. We that would require a case, kind of a case management system, because the same people that go to FISH often come to human services. And so we would have to coordinate how that information is developed as well. We are, make one note, and this is working at the program level with human services. We're also tracking how many referrals we make to those organizations, such as FISH and those others, that will be able to provide you, for example, a community support time. You can see which organizations are really stepping us up to assist us in our human services mm-hmm. efforts. But we could certainly talk to the folks at FISH and find out if there is a way we can coordinate that kind of information.
My impression is the number's a little low. That's why.
They're low?
The numbers are low for homeless in this community. So.
Oh, okay.
But I that's just an impression. I have
yeah.
no knowledge.
Yeah.
So.
I will make sure and get you all the charts for all the categories so you can see.
Well, if they don't.
And that is, now remember, if somebody is living with somebody but they're not seeking assistance, that's not going to show up in these numbers. The person has to actually seek assistance.
Well,
that's
the other
why
thing
I say for total pre-screened applicants, those are the only
go ahead,
ones.
I was just going to say the school district has a fairly good handle
mm-hmm.
on homeless kids,
mm-hmm.
and I thought that number was in the 700 range. So,
okay, we'll check with them.
Well, you know, Carson City really goes above and beyond what's required by HUD. We have two homeless counts,
mm-hmm.
one in January, one
mm-hmm.
in the summer of the year, realizing that people are indoors during the inclement weather. And we're more likely to get a more accurate count during the summer months. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, Carson City goes above and beyond what's required by federal agencies in order to determine the accuracy of our homeless numbers. So you may be right, John, but I do know that
well, we'll,
we're pretty
we'll,
aggressive.
I'll compare these numbers to that homeless count and see where okay. just how far off we are. You know, granted, it's not going to be complete, but what it does is give you an idea over time. Normally, if a person is in trouble and in need of assistance, they will go to your human services department. It won't pick up those that are having an issue but dealing with it on their own.
Well, and the other thing that occurs to me is these organizations like FISH and like Advocates, well, not Advocates as much as Ron Woods, they are being required, if they apply for assistance from the city, they're being required to be a lot more conscientious about quantifying the benefits of their services to Carson City.
Right.
So I think we'll probably have a more accurate notion as to what services they're providing and to how many people are the recipient of those services.
Right, right. And that's
yeah.
why we're also tracking those referrals.
And I think the important thing is the message here is as Linda's mentioned, is the trending. Because essentially what we would see this as the trending of homelessness that came through our doors goes up, that may mean that when we do look at the community support stuff, we may need to look at allocation more resource
mm-hmm.
to those areas that help that. More so than probably the true number of the people that are going through. It's more of a, okay, you know, do we have an effective program to deal with this, or are we going to have to bolster up this area? But more of a trending kind of thing than a sheer pure number. I think when we do the homeless count, it's more of a true number, and I also think what Supervisor McKenna was saying about the children and the schools, that's probably a more accurate count. But what we're looking at here is what do we see as a trend for this community that we need to kind of address as an overall program, if that makes sense.
Do we get information from the state as well? Because I see that, I know that people would, that there are those who are going to the state rather than the city. And are we getting information from the state?
No, again, it's like Linda mentioned, it's, you'd have to know whether or not that same family went to fish to the state to us. You know, so you have to be careful what you're seeing there. And also the state and how it consolidates its offices to try to really figure out where those people are from is very difficult.
Have a transient lifestyle. It doesn't mean that they're sleeping on the street. So I think we need to make that distinction.
Sure. But we have seen that increase. But we are looking. One thing that we are also doing is providing housing-related assistance, and that's rental assistance, utility assistance. So if somebody is in their home, try to keep them there while we provide some other services. And I'll go directly to the next one, which is workforce assistance. A very busy area.
On the reporting of homeless, is FISH and the other social welfare nonprofits, are they in this statistic?
No. These are just folks that come to our human services department.
Okay. Think about, we may want to contact Salvation Army, FISH, et cetera, and have them report.
Yeah, we that would require a case, kind of a case management system, because the same people that go to FISH often come to human services. And so we would have to coordinate how that information is developed as well. We are, make one note, and this is working at the program level with human services. We're also tracking how many referrals we make to those organizations, such as FISH and those others, that will be able to provide you, for example, community support time. You can see which organizations are really stepping us up to assist us in our human services efforts. But we could certainly talk to the folks at FISH and find out if there is a way we can coordinate that kind of information.
My impression is the number's a little low. That's why.
They're low?
The numbers are low for homeless in this community. So.
Oh, okay.
But I that's just an impression. I have no knowledge.
Yeah. So. I will make sure and get you all the charts for all the categories so you can see.
Well, if they don't.
And that is, now remember, if somebody is living with somebody but they're not seeking assistance, that's not going to show up in these numbers. The person has to actually seek assistance.
Well,
that's
the other
why
thing
I say for total pre-screened applicants, those are the only
go ahead,
ones.
I was just going to say the school district has a fairly good handle on homeless kids, and I thought that number was in the 700 range. So,
okay, we'll check with them.
Well, you know, Carson City really goes above and beyond what's required by HUD. We have two homeless counts, one in January, one in the summer of the year, realizing that people are indoors during the inclement weather, and we're more likely to get a more accurate count during the summer months. So, I mean, Carson City goes above and beyond what's required by federal agencies in order to determine the accuracy of our homeless numbers. So you may be right, John, but I do know that.
Well, I'll compare these numbers to that homeless count and see where just how far off we are. You know, granted, it's not going to be complete, but what it does is give you an idea over time. Normally, if a person is in trouble and in need of assistance, they will go to your human services department. It won't pick up those that are having an issue but dealing with it on their own.
Well, and the other thing that occurs to me is these organizations like FISH and like Advocates, well, not Advocates as much as Ron Woods, they are being required, if they apply for assistance from the city, they're being required to be a lot more conscientious about quantifying the benefits of their services to Carson City.
Right.
So I think we'll probably have a more accurate notion as to what services they're providing and to how many people are the recipient of those services.
Right, and that's why we're also tracking those referrals.
And I think the important thing is the message here is, as Linda's mentioned, is the trending. Because essentially what we would see this as the trending of homelessness that came through our doors goes up, that may mean that when we do look at the community support stuff, we may need to look at allocation more resource to those areas that help that. More so than probably the true number of the people that are going through. It's more of a, okay, you know, do we have an effective program to deal with this, or are we going to have to bolster up this area? But more of a trending kind of thing than a sheer pure number. I think when we do the homeless count, it's more of a true number. And I also think what Supervisor McKenna was saying about the children and the schools, that's probably a more accurate count. But what we're looking at here is what do we see as a trend for this community that we need to kind of address as an overall program, well, if that makes sense.
Do we get information from the state as well? Because I see that, I know that people would, that there are those who are going to the state rather than the city. And are we getting information from the state?
No, again, it's like Linda mentioned, you'd have to know whether or not that same family went to fish to the state to us. You know, so you have to be careful what you're seeing there. And also the state and how it consolidates its offices to try to really figure out where those people are from is very difficult. The state does not keep real good records as far as where people are associated with sometimes. Some programs they do, others they don't. So.
The state office here serves a very broad area.
And yeah. Since you're homeless, you really don't have a residence, it's kind of hard to figure out where do you spend most of your non-residence time? It's difficult. Yeah.
It is difficult, but I just see that, you know, we may not have those numbers then within there.
Again, we're not really looking at the peer numbers. We're looking at the trend that we see coming through our operations. And we could, I guess, ask for that same trending from the state.
We could find out if Fish and the state school district, if they track that on a regular basis, we would hold that data separately because it could be repeat. But it can show you the various trends and see if everybody's count is going in the same direction.
Yeah, that may be a validation of what we see coming through our office. Yeah.
And Linda, is there any value to contacting our emergency facilities to see, to track their data too, since a lot of the homeless just show up for, you know, treatment and that's it?
Oh, in the emergency room?
Right, correct.
Yeah, we could find out if they have anything, if they keep that kind of statistic with the emergency room.
I mean, I don't want to put her on the spot, but Lynette Conrad is right here, who does work in the emergency room, mm-hmm. and would be able to address whether or not we could be able to document that.
So I did put you on the spot.
Lynette Conrad, for the record.
I would have to check. I don't believe that we track that in the emergency department. Unfortunately, we do get quite a few homeless patients, and as far as I know, we don't track it, but I could certainly find out for you.
All right, any other questions on this category? If not, go ahead, Linda.
Okay, on to workforce assistance. And you can see on the chart, we've really bumped up the activity. That really is the focus right now in our human services department, is providing assistance to folks to help them get employment, how to interview, you know, putting them into contact with people that may be looking for employees. So that's really a surge in their business. We are tracking how many of those get employment. We just started that, so I don't really have a whole lot of information yet, but when next quarter we should be able to report that to you as well, as how much success we're seeing with that. We're also, just to give you a kind of an overall sense of some of the activity in our human services department, we've got the applicants processed for assistance. That's the people that are coming in. When somebody comes in, a case is started, they actually track these things. So it shows you that actually we've seen a little bit of a trend down for requests for assistance since September of 2009 for total assistance. Okay, and that can be assistance for anything. That's medical assistance, that's housing-related assistance, workforce housing, anything that the Human Services Department does. This is an example of some of the more detailed information we're able to get now that we're working at the program level. Moving on to a diverse, vibrant, sustainable economy, local businesses are supported. This is a measure showing the number of new business licenses applications processed. You can see it's relatively flat, which is good news. We saw for the year we were down as compared to the prior year by 2. So I would say it is absolutely flat from the prior year. That is good news. The out of business, reported to be out of business, it's really too new of a measure to really get a good solid trend, because usually that is reported at renewal time, which is coming up in December. So when we get a couple Decembers under our belt, we'll be able to really have a better idea of what the trend has been as far as businesses closing. But the fact that we do see new businesses coming in, I mean, last year, 200 or year to date, 240, that's not bad. That's hopeful. Taxable sales, we track as we have in the past. We're going to give you all of the taxable sale information by category. There's a pie chart that shows you where our biggest categories, and of course it's retail and automotive are the largest categories. Also, a new type of chart that we have on this, that I have the capability of creating, is a gauge. And what this gauge does is it shows you our target is to meet what the taxable sales amount was for a year ago, and that's right between the red and the green on that gauge. And you can see we're above it year to date. Slightly. Now, I want to throw some caution out there because we're above that because of one category and a one-time expense. But we'll share these gauges with you because it gives you an idea of magnitude, not just, oh, we're better than last year, but how much better or how much worse we are.
Yeah, and the danger here, too, is that although it's taxable sales, the state does not keep real good records as far as where people are associated with sometimes. Some programs they do, others they don't.
The state office here serves a very broad area,
And yeah. Since you're homeless, you really don't have a residence. It's kind of hard to figure out where do you spend most of your non-residence time? It's difficult. Yeah.
It is difficult, but I just see that we may not have those numbers then within there.
Again, we're not really looking at the peer numbers. We're looking at the trend that we see coming through our operations. And we could, I guess, ask for that same trending from the state.
We could find out if Fish and the state school district, if they track that on a regular basis, we would hold that data separately because it could be repeat. But it can show you the various trends and see if everybody's count is going in the same direction.
Yeah, that may be a validation of what we see coming through our office. Yeah.
And, Linda, is there any value to contacting our emergency facilities to see to track their data too, since a lot of the homeless just show up for treatment and that's it?
Oh, in the emergency room?
Right, correct.
Yeah, we could find out if they have anything, if they keep that kind of statistic with the emergency room.
I mean, I don't want to put her on the spot, but Lynette Conrad is right here, who does work in the emergency room, mm-hmm. and would be able to address whether or not we could be able to document that.
Lynette Conrad, for the record. I would have to check. I don't believe that we track that in the emergency department. Unfortunately, we do get quite a few homeless patients. And as far as I know, we don't track it, but I could certainly find out for you.
Thanks. Okay. All right. Any other questions on this category? If not, go ahead, Linda.
Okay. On to workforce assistance. And you can see on the chart, we've really bumped up the activity. That really is the focus right now in our human services department, is providing assistance to folks to help them get employment, how to interview, putting them into contact with people that may be looking for employees. So that's really a surge in their business. We are tracking how many of those get employment. We just started that, so I don't really have a whole lot of information yet, but when next quarter we should be able to report that to you as well, so how much success we're seeing with that. We're also, just to give you a kind of an overall sense of some of the activity in our human services department, we've got the applicants processed for assistance. That's the people that are coming in. When somebody comes in, a case is started, they actually track these things. So it shows you that actually we've seen a little bit of a trend down for requests for assistance since September of 2009 for total assistance. Okay, and that can be assistance for anything. That's medical assistance, that's housing-related assistance, workforce housing, anything that the Human Services Department does. This is an example of some of the more detailed information we're able to get now that we're working at the program level. Moving on to a diverse, vibrant, sustainable economy, local businesses are supported. This is a measure showing the number of new business licenses applications processed. You can see it's relatively flat, which is good news. We saw for the year we were down as compared to the prior year by 2. So I would say it is absolutely flat from the prior year. That is good news. The out of business, reported to be out of business, it's really too new of a measure to really get a good solid trend, because usually that is reported at renewal time, which is coming up in December. So when we get a couple Decembers under our belt, we'll be able to really have a better idea of what the trend has been as far as businesses closing. But the fact that we do see new businesses coming in, I mean, last year 200 or year to date 240, that's not bad. That's hopeful. Taxable sales, we track as we have in the past. We're going to give you all of the taxable sale information by category. There is a pie chart that shows you where our biggest categories, and of course it's retail and automotive are the largest categories. Also, a new type of chart that we have on this, that I have the capability of creating, is a gauge. And what this gauge does is it shows you our target is to meet what the taxable sales amount was for a year ago, and that's right between the red and the green on that gauge. And you can see we're above it year to date. Slightly. Now, I want to throw some caution out there because we're above that because of one category and a one-time expense. But we'll share these gauges with you because it gives you an idea of magnitude, not just, oh, we're better than last year, but how much better or how much worse we are.
Yeah. And the danger here, too, is that although it's taxable sales, our actual sales receipt does not trend the same way.
Yeah.
So our actual receipts are trending downward while the taxable sales are turning upward. And that's because of out-of-state sales that were recorded here in Carson. Is that right, Nick? So I don't know whether or not we ought to do a – do we have one in here?
It'll be on the revenue side. When we look at the budget, the financial stuff, there is a – we track the intergovernmental revenue, which is by bulk the receipts. But we can certainly pull that out and include that in here to show that difference.
I'm wondering, because if somebody looks at that and says, well, why are we talking about budget issues? Look at all the revenue we got. Well, that's really not true. That's not revenue. That's just reported sales in this area. So that's a real – yeah, we'll talk about that one.
Yeah, we can go ahead and add that to put a reality check on that. As I go through these slides and as you look at them, you can take a look at what's happening. For example, the automotive, we saw a slight decline for half the year and for the month. But take a look at the trend lines. Really what this does, it tells you trend over time, how it's been going. And automotive, actually, if you look at the last two years, it's actually trended up a little bit. Retail's been somewhat flat. The food and drink has actually come up a little bit, and that has been an area of challenge for quite some time. And, of course, now we're comparing to 2009 versus some of our robust years. But still, I mean, over the two-year period, at least we're seeing a little bit of a tip up instead of what we saw for so long as far as it going down. Durable goods, you see a little bit of an increase, again, better than what we saw in 2009, but certainly probably not as good as what we saw before. And at any time, if you'd like to see any of these charts with a longer time period, you know, we can certainly produce those for you quickly. Wholesales trending up, as well as manufacturing. And here we've got services, and we did have a one-time expenditure. I'm not sure if any of that fell into the city coffers or if that was an out-of-state sale. Construction continues a downward trend. And that has been happening for quite some time. And construction, the good news there is construction is a very small portion of our overall economic activity. Other sales, and this is where you see the real spike, that was in a line item called credit intermediation and related activities. And I don't know, Nick, was that an out-of-state sale? Was that an out-of-state? So we didn't get full credit for that, but it did show as far as our activity goes. Okay. But we will definitely work on some charts that will show you the actual amount of dollars that came in. Assistance provided at the BRIC, I will get you some updated charts. We do have the information up to September 30th, but we are seeing a pretty good number of folks of new businesses coming in, more than the existing businesses coming in for assistance. So we are seeing that continuing to trend up over this last quarter. Average employment, this is growth in strategically defined sectors of the economy, is encouraged. We're getting this information from Dieter and their quarterly wage and employment reports that they do. It's a little bit of a delay, and when we get that data, because it takes them quite a bit of time to collect that, but you can see that the average employment by industry, it is definitely trending down. Now, we separated on your reports by a private component as well as the public component. And back here you can see on this bar chart the private employment is in green, the public's employment is in brown. So you can see that where the two sit within Carson City. Private employment, you can see a big portion of it is healthcare related. We're fortunate to have some great healthcare facilities here. So that is a very large portion of it. We've got quite a bit in trade, transportation, and utilities, as well as leisure and hospitality. But again, those are trending down. Now, the wages, though, we also get the total wages that are paid. Those are actually showing some positive results over a year ago. So we're seeing a good number there, but the number of jobs, not so much. Public employment, when you break down the public employment, of course, no surprise, state government is the largest piece. Here, the green is federal and local government, which would be school as well as Carson City is in the purple. No surprise, we've seen the number of jobs trend down, and of course, we've seen the wages trend down more than the number of jobs, and that's as a result of furloughs that we've seen at the state level. We track total employment and unemployment. The employment numbers continue to go below what it was a year ago, as reported by Dieter, and these are reported on a monthly basis. We're also giving you the unemployment.
Sales receipt does not trend the same way.
Yeah.
So our actual receipts are trending downward while the taxable sales are trending upward. And that's because of out-of-state sales that were recorded here in Carson. Is that right, Nick? So I don't know whether or not we ought to do a – do we have one in here?
We have it'll be on the revenue side. When we look at the budget, the financial stuff, there is a – we track the intergovernmental revenue, which is by bulk the receipts. But we can certainly pull that out and include that in here to show that difference.
I'm wondering, because if somebody looks at that and says, well, why are we talking about budget issues? Look at all the revenue we got. Well, that's really not true. That's not revenue. That's reported
just
sales in this area. So that's a real – yeah, we'll talk about that one.
Yeah, we can go ahead and add that to put a reality check on that. As I go through these slides and as you look at them, you can take a look at what's happening. For example, the automotive, we saw a slight decline for half the year and for the month. But take a look at the trend lines. Really, what this does, it tells you trend over time, how it's been going. And automotive, actually, if you look at the last two years, it's actually trended up a little bit. Retail's been somewhat flat. The food and drink has actually come up a little bit, and that has been an area of challenge for quite some time. And, of course, now we're comparing to 2009 versus some of our robust years. But still, I mean, over the two-year period, at least we're seeing a little bit of a tip up instead of what we saw for so long as far as it going down. Durable goods, you see a little bit of an increase, again, better than what we saw in 2009, but certainly probably not as good as what we saw before. And at any time, if you'd like to see any of these charts with a longer time period, you know, we can certainly produce those for you quickly. Wholesales trending up as well as manufacturing. And here we've got services, and we did have a one-time expenditure. I'm not sure if any of that fell into the city coffers or if that was an out-of-state sale. Construction continues a downward trend. And that has been happening for quite some time. And construction, the good news there is construction is a very small portion of our overall economic activity. Other sales, and this is where you see the real spike, that was in a line item called credit intermediation and related activities. And I don't know, Nick, was that an out-of-state sale? Was that an out-of-state? So we didn't get full credit for that, but it did show as far as our activity goes. Okay. But we will definitely work on some charts that will show you the actual amount of dollars that came in. Assistance provided at the BRIC, I will get you some updated charts. We do have the information up to September 30th, but we are seeing a pretty good number of new businesses coming in, more than the existing businesses coming in for assistance. So we are seeing that continuing to trend up over this last quarter. Average employment, this is growth in strategically defined sectors of the economy is encouraged. We're getting this information from Dieter and their quarterly wage and employment reports that they do. It's a little bit of a delay, and when we get that data, because it takes them quite a bit of time to collect that, but you can see that the average employment by industry, it is definitely trending down. Now, we separated on your reports by a private component as well as the public component. And back here you can see on this bar chart the private employment is in green, the public's employment is in brown. So you can see that where the two sit within Carson City. Private employment, you can see a big portion of it is healthcare related. We're fortunate to have some great healthcare facilities here. So that is a very large portion of it. We've got quite a bit in trade, transportation, and utilities, as well as leisure and hospitality. But again, those are trending down. Now, the wages, though, we also get the total wages that are paid. Those are actually showing some positive results over a year ago. So we're seeing a good number there, but the number of jobs, not so much. Public employment, when you break down the public employment, of course, no surprise, state government is the largest piece. Here, the green is federal and local government, which would be school as well as Carson City is in the purple. No surprise, we've seen the number of jobs trend down, and of course, we've seen the wages trend down more than the number of jobs, and that's as a result of furloughs that we've seen at the state level. We track total employment and unemployment. The employment numbers continue to go below what it was a year ago, as reported by Dieter, and these are reported on a monthly basis. We're also giving you the unemployment numbers. Now, one thing to remember with unemployment, you can see it really dropped off here. We didn't see a like increase in the number of employment opportunities, so that is most likely people that have discontinued a job search or left the area. Okay, and that's why we see some green in that area, is really because of that. If, you know, better news would be we'd see an upswing in the number of of jobs that would offset that employment, but that's not what has happened. Moving on to a clean and healthy environment, solid waste. This is just an annual number. We'll continue to show it in every report should somebody, you know, get to some quarter and have an interest in what that annual number is. The percent of waste that is recycled, we saw it go down a bit, but one thing to keep in mind, the amount of recycling is really directly related to markets and what's happening with the markets out there for metals in particular, and if the market is not strong, you're not going to see as much activity in recycling. Lifespan at the landfill continues to be very good and actually continues to grow as the landfill is managed very well. Wastewater is safely and effectively treated and disposed of. We monitor where we are with plant capacity. If we get up to 85% plant capacity, we need to plan for an expansion. We are staying below that as far as inflow goes. We see a slight increase in the inflow, and I believe that's because we've been redoing some of our lines. We get more capture on our as far as the plant inflow, no leakage, and so we're seeing a little bit of an increase. But you can see this last quarter, it really did drop down quite a bit. Water quality tests, our wastewater quality tests remain at 100% all the way across the board. And that water is disposed of as effluent, and we do track effluent production ratios. The production stays pretty consistent. The use, of course, is in the summer months for irrigation. I want to draw your attention to the Brunswick reservoir percentage of capacity. That's really our water balance. We have to keep a balance of how much is stored and how much is used, make sure we use it in the summer so we can store it during those winter months. And staying within that, those parameters of 13 and 75% is very important, and the staff does it. We do a really good job of staying in that. I've been in a situation where we had to expand reservoirs, and that's not an easy thing to do and a very expensive thing. Moving on to renewable energy and our energy use in city facilities, we are trending somewhat down in our energy use. We are tracking our renewable energy that we are generating ourselves, and it's a relatively new measure. We just started in March 11, so it's really hard to draw any conclusions as far as how we're doing, but we will continue to monitor that. Use of fossil fuels and city equipment, we monitor fuel use as far as unleaded as well as diesel fuel. For the year, we are down as on unleaded fuel use. We've seen a little bit of an increase recently. And in diesel, we actually got below the prior year this month, but the last quarter and year, we've been higher than what our use had been. So and that actually came from the water. When we really break it down, we do break it down by department. That was in our water department, and because of some of the activities that are going there. So as soon as we see fuel use go up, we're able to quickly hit a button that shows us exactly which areas are seeing that increase in use. So we can talk to them and find out, is there anything that we need to do differently to continue to conserve. The next group has to do with an active and engaged community, and we track our use of our facilities, the community center gymnasium, and I'm just going to draw you to the charts because that probably tells best how we're doing. Our gymnasium, the number of days used has actually fallen off a bit. The theater continues to climb. The brown lines are 10% either way of what it was a year ago, and the green line is what it is now. And so the theater continues to be very well used. Meeting rooms, much more use at our meeting rooms in this facility than in the past. And then we're seeing more soccer at Mills Park. At Centennial Park, a big increase in usage there from the leagues as well as tournaments. We're way over the 10% mark for the month, the quarter, the year, throughout. It just continues to climb. The round count, we're tracking now what's happening at the Eagle Valley Golf Course, and we take the total rounds and say let's try to target with staying within 10% either side of numbers. Now, one thing to remember with unemployment, you can see it really dropped off here. We didn't see a like increase in the number of employment opportunities, so that is most likely people that have discontinued a job search or left the area. Okay, and that's why we see some green in that area, is really because of that. If, you know, better news would be we'd see an upswing in the number of of jobs that would offset that employment, but that's not what has happened. Moving on to a clean and healthy environment, solid waste. This is just an annual number. We'll continue to show it in every report should somebody, you know, get to some quarter and have an interest in what that annual number is. The percent of waste that is recycled, we saw it go down a bit, but one thing to keep in mind, the amount of recycling is really directly related to markets and what's happening with the markets out there for metals in particular, and if the market is not strong, you're not going to see as much activity in recycling. Lifespan at the landfill continues to be very good and actually continues to grow as the landfill is managed very well. Wastewater is safely and effectively treated and disposed of. We monitor where we are with plant capacity. If we get up to 85% plant capacity, we need to plan for an expansion. We are staying below that as far as inflow goes. We see a slight increase in the inflow, and I believe that's because we've been redoing some of our lines. We get more capture on our as far as the plant inflow, no leakage, and so we're seeing a little bit of an increase. But you can see this last quarter, it really did drop down quite a bit. Water quality tests, our wastewater quality tests remain at 100% all the way across the board. And that water is disposed of as effluent, and we do track effluent production ratios. The production stays pretty consistent. The use, of course, is in the summer months for irrigation. I want to draw your attention to the Brunswick reservoir percentage of capacity. That's really our water balance. We have to keep a balance of how much is stored and how much is used, make sure we use it in the summer so we can store it during those winter months. And staying within that, those parameters of 13 and 75% is very important, and the staff does it. We do a really good job of staying in that. I've been in a situation where we had to expand reservoirs, and that's not an easy thing to do and a very expensive thing. Moving on to renewable energy and our energy use in city facilities, we are trending somewhat down in our energy use. We are tracking our renewable energy that we are generating ourselves, and it's a relatively new measure. We just started in March 11, so it's really hard to draw any conclusions as far as how we're doing, but we will continue to monitor that. Use of fossil fuels and city equipment, we monitor fuel use as far as unleaded as well as diesel fuel. For the year, we are down as on unleaded fuel use. We've seen a little bit of an increase recently. And in diesel, we actually got below the prior year this month, but the last quarter and year, we've been higher than what our use had been. So and that actually came from the water. When we really break it down, we do break it down by department. That was in our water department, and because of some of the activities that are going there. So as soon as we see fuel use go up, we're able to quickly hit a button that shows us exactly which areas are seeing that increase in use. So we can talk to them and find out, is there anything that we need to do differently to continue to conserve? The next group has to do with an active and engaged community, and we track our use of our facilities, the community center gymnasium, and I'm just going to draw you to the charts because that probably tells best how we're doing. Our gymnasium, the number of days used has actually fallen off a bit. The theater continues to climb. The brown lines are 10% either way of what it was a year ago, and the green line is what it is now. And so the theater continues to be very well used. Meeting rooms, much more use at our meeting rooms in this facility than in the past. And then we're seeing more soccer at Mills Park. At Centennial Park, a big increase in usage there from the leagues as well as tournaments. We're way over the 10% mark for the month, the quarter, the year, throughout. It just continues to climb. The round count, we're tracking now what's happening at the Eagle Valley Golf Course, and we take the total rounds and say let's try to target with staying within 10% either side of what it was a year ago, and they are staying within that number. So actually, if you look, there was a slight trend up, which is really good news in golf because that's not the trend in many golf courses, but they're doing a great job with that. And then the number of visitors at the library, we're continuing to see a trend up there as well. Looking at our programs, adult and youth sports participants, and this is the number of participants we have in our programs each month, we're seeing adult sports go up as we see more leagues being organized, and we're seeing youth sports trend slightly up. Let's see. Swimming lessons is an area we've seen a little bit of a decline in, and that can be an economic driven. That's could be what's driving that slowdown in the swimming lessons. And our latchkey program also has seen somewhat of a decline, and that can be economically driven as well as people look for other avenues for child care. And then a couple of the other programs, movers and doers participants, that's one of the programs that are offered through recreation. We are monitoring cooperative extension. They've offered their data because they have to collect it anyway, and they want to start collecting it on a more active basis, on a monthly basis, and they'll actually have access to this program, and we'll have more information as far as some of the programs that they offer in the future. Community-based organizations, we just track, and this is information you already know, but community support grants, what's happened with community support grants, definitely they've fallen off as our resources have fallen off. We also, a new number, we are inventorying the number of nonprofit organizations. We'll just do this annually, but we had 189 nonprofit organizations when we did the research. So that's quite a bit for a community this size. Very, very active nonprofit sector.
I think one of the things that's always concerned me is the proliferation of nonprofits with similar missions. Mm-hmm. You know, it's difficult enough for a nonprofit in this day and age to raise money, but when you're competing with multiple organizations who basically have the same mission statement, I don't know that there's any way that we can effectively influence that, but it is a problem, especially when they all appear before the board, you know, looking for financial assistance, and to the extent that we can encourage them to cooperate and maybe merge their operations so that it increases efficiency and limits the redundancy, the better.
And that's been a concern of ours also, because we're also seeing competition for programs that we provide also. And although, you know, if it's really an improvement to the community, that's wonderful, but if it's just simply a duplication and a siphoning off of an effective program that we have, then we, you know, it's troublesome. But again, we're not sure exactly what we can do about it, but we understand, and we're also looking into it, see if we can, if there's something we can do.
Thank you, Larry.
As far as there are recreational opportunities provided for nonprofit organizations, and so we do track some of those, especially where we provide the facility, Children's Museum, the BAC, and some of those. And that's what you see in the left-hand side. Those are just an annual number. Working with youth sports, we're now getting information as far as, on a monthly basis, how much activity they have going on at our fields, which is very good news because we can really measure some of that impact. At first, it was just the games, but now they're also giving us information on practices, which is very, very helpful for us to really see. We'll be able to demonstrate the activity happening in the various fields and by field, so that's good news. Moving on to transportation. Public transportation is convenient and accessible. Number of riders on the JAC system continues to increase, quite substantially, actually. And the pie chart just shows you the ridership on each one of the routes, and they're very evenly divided. So that's good. That's a well-managed public transit system. Pathways, we just measure the amount that we're, the number of miles of pathways we're able to build each year. I do need to check, and I apologize, check on 2010. I don't have a number in there, but I'm not sure if truly there was no pathways constructed that period, but I will check back on that. One thing with pathways, it's budget-driven and also opportunity-driven. If there's another construction project in the area, we may be able to put a pathway in, but it's really hard. We don't have a target on this. This is just general information. Historic resources or preserves, the one measure we use is, well, what kind of applications are we seeing for before the Historic Resource Commission? Redoing of historic buildings, definitely an economically impacted area if it was a year ago, and they are staying within that number. So actually, if you look, there was a slight trend up, which is really good news in golf, because that's not the trend in many golf courses, but they're doing a great job with that. And then the number of visitors at the library, we're continuing to see a trend up there as well. Looking at our programs, adult and youth sports participants, and this is the number of participants we have in our programs each month, we're seeing adult sports go up as we see more leagues being organized, and we're seeing youth sports trend slightly up. Swimming lessons is an area we've seen a little bit of a decline in, and that can be an economic driven. That's could be what's driving that slowdown in the swimming lessons. And our latchkey program also has seen somewhat of a decline, and that can be economically driven as well, as people look for other avenues for child care. And then a couple of the other programs, movers and doers participants, that's one of the programs that are offered through recreation. We are monitoring cooperative extension. They've offered their data because they have to collect it anyway, and they want to start collecting it on a more active basis, on a monthly basis, and they'll actually have access to this program, and we'll have more information as far as some of the programs that they offer in the future. Community-based organizations, we just track, and this is information you already know, but community support grants, what's happened with community support grants, definitely they've fallen off as our resources have fallen off. We also, a new number, we are inventorying the number of nonprofit organizations. We'll just do this annually, but we had 189 nonprofit organizations when we did the research. So that's quite a bit for a community this size. Very, very active nonprofit sector.
I think one of the things that's always concerned me is the proliferation of nonprofits with similar missions. Mm-hmm. You know, it's difficult enough for a nonprofit in this day and age to raise money, but when you're competing with multiple organizations who basically have the same mission statement, I don't know that there's any way that we can effectively influence that, but it is a problem, especially when they all appear before the board, you know, looking for financial assistance, and to the extent that we can encourage them to cooperate and maybe merge their operations so that it increases efficiency and limits the redundancy, the better.
And that's been a concern of ours also, because we're also seeing competition for programs that we provide also. And although, you know, if it's really an improvement to the community, that's wonderful, but if it's just simply a duplication and a siphoning off of an effective program that we have, then we, you know, it's troublesome. But again, we're not sure exactly what we can do about it, but we understand, and we're also looking into it, see if there's something we can do.
Thank you, Larry.
As far as there are recreational opportunities provided for nonprofit organizations, and so we do track some of those, especially where we provide the facility, Children's Museum, the BAC, and some of those. And that's what you see in the left-hand side. Those are just an annual number. Working with youth sports, we're now getting information as far as, on a monthly basis, how much activity they have going on at our fields, which is very good news because we can really measure some of that impact. At first, it was just the games, but now they're also giving us information on practices, which is very, very helpful for us to really see. We'll be able to demonstrate the activity happening in the various fields and by field, so that's good news. Moving on to transportation, public transportation is convenient and accessible. Number of riders on the JAC system continues to increase, quite substantially, actually. And the pie chart just shows you the ridership on each one of the routes, and they're very evenly divided. So that's good. That's a well-managed public transit system. Pathways, we just measure the amount that we're, the number of miles of pathways we're able to build each year. I do need to check, and I apologize, check on 2010. I don't have a number in there, but I'm not sure if truly there was no pathways constructed that period, but I will check back on that. One thing with pathways, it's budget-driven and also opportunity-driven. If there's another construction project in the area, we may be able to put a pathway in, but it's really hard. We don't have a target on this. This is just general information. Historic resources or preserves, the one measure we use is, well, what kind of applications are we seeing for before the Historic Resource Commission? Redoing of historic buildings, definitely an economically impacted area. If the economy is tough, there's probably going to be less activity, and there really has been in that area. Moving on to education and lifelong learning, looking at our resources for lifelong learning that we offer, we track the material circulation, and the library's been doing this for quite some time, tracking this stat. Now we give it to you graphically, and we do see an increase in the amount of circulation, the number of materials are being circulated. Another one is the reference questions asked at the Carson City Library. The bulk of those are by adults, but we do track children as well as adults. But there is quite a bit of activity at the reference desk, and this is where a person can go in at any time. I'm looking for this information, and the reference librarian directs you to that area and helps you find that information. Tools for lifelong learning. We provide wireless network at the library, and it's been interesting looking at the use. It bumped a couple of times, and now it's fallen off a bit as far as that goes. I'm not really sure. I haven't been able to determine anything that really points to a reason for that. Public computer use remains flat. We had a real bump back in 2009, and now it's flattened back out a little bit. But we do track that. And those computers are definitely used. Anytime you go in there, they're filled up. Our ability to provide information regarding city services and issues to the public, we do track our web hits. And looking at our web page requests, this is people that go to these particular web pages, over 1,500 hits per month. The largest is the assessor, and no surprise there. That's customarily what you see is realtors and others go there for that real estate information. The sheriff's year-to-date is the second highest, and that really can be attributed to work on getting warrants taken care of early this year. And then you can see the rest of them. There is, and you'll see when we go through a couple of the initiatives, we are working on policies for making sure that our website is updated and the information is current. Citizens are encouraged to become involved with their local government. We do track how many applications we get per position, board, committee, or commission position. And we set a target of three. It'd be nice if you had three applicants for every position. We are falling under that. That's going to vary according to the position. Some are more popular than others. But this can speak to a need for recruitment and getting out there and encouraging people to become involved with that. And we also now are tracking our voter turnout, and I presented this to you last time. Numbers aren't going to change. We only have an election every other year, but you can see that the percentage of voter turnout, a little bit of a trend up, and the percentage of population in Carson that is that's registered stays pretty flat. Moving on to effective resource management, this is showing both quarter and fiscal year to date and on all your finances, so this is July through September, and how we are comparing to our target. Now, our target is developed by taking, for example, the amount of revenues in each category. We look at how much is collected each month as a percentage. Then we apply that against our current budget. So as long as the revenues are coming in as they had in the past, then we're going to hit our target. But sometimes we see times when that does not happen. For example, quality of life, we're a little slow on the or blow on our revenue, and that is a timing difference. And this first quarter, you're going to see a lot of that. I want to caution you, don't get too excited when you see the red on the first quarter, because it can change drastically after that second quarter. We're taking 3 months out of the year, and if, for example, I believe it was licenses permit, something got posted in October rather than September, it's showing that it's really short, but that will true up after the second quarter. So this first quarter is a little tenuous to really make draw any conclusions as far as that goes, but you can see the quarter as well as and the year, they are the same at this point, but next quarter you'll see from October to December as far as a quarter number and then the year to date for a half a year, and that's going to give you a better picture of where we're at. Looking at general fund, miscellaneous revenue is off, but it's a very small amount. License and permits, that's the one that I explained that we had got posted in October rather than September as it had in previous years. In the public safety general government, some of these, it's pretty large variance, and that's because we had an additional payroll in September. So again, because we're just looking at the economy's tough, there's probably going to be less activity, and there really has been in that area. Moving on to education and lifelong learning, looking at our resources for lifelong learning that we offer, we track the material circulation, and the library's been doing this for quite some time, tracking this stat. Now we give it to you graphically, and we do see an increase in the amount of circulation, the number of materials are being circulated. Another one is the reference questions asked at the Carson City Library. The bulk of those are by adults, but we do track children as well as adults. But there is quite a bit of activity at the reference desk, and this is where a person can go in at any time. I'm looking for this information, and the reference librarian directs you to that area and helps you find that information. Tools for lifelong learning. We provide wireless network at the library. And it's been interesting looking at the use. It bumped a couple of times, and now it's fallen off a bit as far as that goes. I'm not really sure. I haven't been able to determine anything that really points to a reason for that. Public computer use remains flat. We had a real bump back in 2009, and now it's flattened back out a little bit. But we do track that. And those computers are definitely used. Anytime you go in there, they're filled up. Our ability to provide information regarding city services and issues to the public, we do track our web hits. And looking at our web page requests, this is people that go to these particular web pages, over 1,500 hits per month. The largest is the assessor, and no surprise there. That's customarily what you see as realtors and others go there for that real estate information. The sheriff's year-to-date is the second highest, and that really can be attributed to work on getting warrants taken care of early this year. And then you can see the rest of them. There is, and you'll see when we go through a couple of the initiatives, we are working on policies for making sure that our website is updated and the information is current. Citizens are encouraged to become involved with their local government. We do track how many applications we get per position, board, committee, or commission position. And we set a target of three. It'd be nice if you had three applicants for every position. We are falling under that. That's going to vary according to the position. Some are more popular than others. But this can speak to a need for recruitment and getting out there and encouraging people to become involved with that. And we also now are tracking our voter turnout, and I presented this to you last time. Numbers aren't going to change. We only have an election every other year, but you can see that the percentage of voter turnout, a little bit of a trend up, and the percentage of population in Carson that is that's registered stays pretty flat. Moving on to effective resource management, this is showing both quarter and fiscal year to date and on all your finances, so this is July through September, and how we are comparing to our target. Now, our target is developed by taking, for example, the amount of revenues in each category. We look at how much is collected each month as a percentage. Then we apply that against our current budget. So as long as the revenues are coming in as they had in the past, then we're going to hit our target. But sometimes we see times when that does not happen. For example, quality of life, we're a little slow on the or blow on our revenue, and that is a timing difference. And this first quarter, you're going to see a lot of that. I want to caution you, don't get too excited when you see the red on the first quarter, because it can change drastically after that second quarter. We're taking 3 months out of the year, and if, for example, I believe it was licenses permit, something got posted in October rather than September, it's showing that it's really short, but that will true up after the second quarter. So this first quarter is a little tenuous to really make draw any conclusions as far as that goes, but you can see the quarter as well as and the year, they are the same at this point, but next quarter you'll see from October to December as far as a quarter number and then the year to date for a half a year, and that's going to give you a better picture of where we're at. Looking at general fund, miscellaneous revenue is off, but it's a very small amount. License and permits, that's the one that I explained that we had got posted in October rather than September as it had in previous years. In the public safety general government, some of these, it's pretty large variance, and that's because we had an additional payroll in September. So again, because we're just looking at that 3 months, it doesn't give you a real good sense. We do go back and check when we see these to find out, okay, is there anything that we've missed? We identified that additional payroll in this quarter as compared to the prior quarters, and that is really what's driven it. Included in the report is some comments from Nick about those variances, and also a chart showing what general fund revenues and expenditures have been doing. And you can see the both, of course, have been trending down. No surprise to you there. Okay. Any questions on that report?
Thank you very much. Any questions by members of the board? Any questions by members of the public regarding the most recent scorecard? All right. This is actually an action item.
Yeah, I need the action, and I will. You will get a report on all the initiative status. We don't. I mean, we're working on developing a report for you coming off of the system. We've had some technical difficulties. I hope to have that to you in the next week, and so you'll get a report of all the initiatives that you approved as part of the strategic planning session, as well as some of the others, transportation projects, and what their current status is, and you'll get that in the next week. I apologize that that's not ready for you yet.
That's okay. Thank you, Linda. All right. Somebody care to make a motion?
I'll make a motion.
Karen?
I move to approve the revised performance measures for the objective families in need are offered short-term assistance and provided resources to become self-supported to include households provided housing-related assistance, homeless count, total pre-screened applicants, persons provided workforce program assistance, and total number of applications for assistance approved with the other suggested amendments.
Any comments on the question? All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. All right. Thank you, Linda. Lee, do you need some time to set up, or are you prepared to march forward? Okay. All right.
Bill number will be 120.
Thank you, Alan. Okay, welcome, gentlemen.
Hey, thank you. For the record, Lee Plummel, Planning Director. With me is Patrick Pittenger from the Regional Transportation Office and Ken Smithson from the Regional Transportation Office, who have submitted this request for this ordinance. This item is for possible action to introduce an ordinance amending the Carson City Municipal Code Title 18, Title 18 Appendix Development Standards, Division 4 related to signs, and specifically to add a new subsection for to the off-premise sign sections to allow advertising on city bus shelters subject to specific criteria. The ordinance is included in your packets, as well as a staff report with an explanation that went to the Planning Commission. Just to briefly give an overview, and well, let me start by this. Here's a picture of what we're talking about. A Carson City bus shelter looks like this. and there's some various ones. Just to go back here, so here's kind of some highlights of this ordinance. As I mentioned, this is off-premise advertising. This is not because it's on property and it's advertising goods and services and things that are somewhere else, like a billboard. Obviously much smaller than a typical billboard that we have. So we've put some suggested language, which begins on page 10 of your packet, page 8 of the ordinance, with some limitations. So some of the things we've talked about or that are proposed to be included in the ordinance are these bus shelters would be allowed to have signs. It would be limited only to commercial areas, not and prohibited in residential areas, and prohibited within 100 feet of residentially zoned areas. Be prohibited in the historic district. The signs would have no internal lighting, and in fact, I think, as I mentioned, there's no electricity to these bus shelters. There would be no external lighting either in practice. It would prohibit electronic reader board type signs or similar animated or flashing signs, and that's consistent with other off-premise advertising.
3 months, it doesn't give you a real good sense. We do go back and check when we see these to find out, okay, is there anything that we've missed? We identified that additional payroll in this quarter as compared to the prior quarters, and that is really what's driven it. Included in the report is some comments from Nick about those variances, and also a chart showing what general fund revenues and expenditures have been doing, and you can see the both course have been trending down. No surprise to you there. Okay. Any questions
Linda,
on that report?
Thank you very much. Any questions by members of the board? Any questions by members of the public regarding the most recent scorecard? All right. This is actually an action item.
Yeah, I need the action, and I will you will get a report on all the initiative status. We're working on developing a report for you coming off of the system. We've had some technical difficulties. I hope to have that to you in the next week. And so you'll get a report of all the initiatives that you approved as part of the strategic planning session, as well as some of the others, transportation projects, and what their current status is. And you'll get that in the next week. I apologize that that's not ready for you yet.
That's okay. Thank you, Linda. All right. Somebody care to make a motion?
I'll make a motion.
Karen?
I move to approve the revised performance measures for the objective families in need are offered short-term assistance and provided resources to become self-supported to include households provided housing-related assistance, homeless count, total pre-screened applicants, persons provided workforce program assistance, and total number of applications for assistance approved with the other suggested amendments.
Any comments on the question? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. All right. Thank you, Linda. Lee, do you need some time to set up, or are you prepared to march forward? Okay. All right.
Bill number will be 120.
Thank you, Alan. Okay, welcome, gentlemen.
Hey, thank you. For the record, Lee Plummel, Planning Director. With me is Patrick Pittenger from the Regional Transportation Office and Ken Smithson from the Regional Transportation Office, who have submitted this request for this ordinance. This item is for possible action to introduce an ordinance amending the Carson City Municipal Code Title 18, Title 18 Appendix Development Standards, Division 4 related to signs, and specifically to add a new subsection to the off-premise sign sections to allow advertising on city bus shelters subject to specific criteria. The ordinance is included in your packets, as well as a staff report with an explanation that went to the Planning Commission. Just to briefly give an overview, let me start by this. Here's a picture of what we're talking about. A Carson City bus shelter looks like this. and there's some various ones. Just to go back here, so here's kind of some highlights of this ordinance. As I mentioned, this is technically, this is off-premise advertising. This is not because it's on property and it's advertising goods and services and things that are somewhere else, like a billboard. Obviously much smaller than a typical billboard that we have. So we put some suggested language, which begins on page 10 of your packet, page 8 of the ordinance, with some limitations. So some of the things we've talked about or that are proposed to be included in the ordinance are to, with these bus shelters would be allowed to have signs. It would be limited only to commercial areas, not and prohibited in residential areas and prohibited within 100 feet of residentially zoned areas. Be prohibited in the historic district. The signs would have no internal lighting, and in fact, I think, as I mentioned, there's no electricity to these bus shelters. There would be no external lighting either in practice. It would prohibit electronic reader board type signs or similar animated or flashing signs, and that's consistent with other off-premise advertising. And limited to 24 square feet per bus shelter, which is basically a 6x4 sign, the size of one of the bus shelter panels. And I would also note they would be subject to the policies that the RTC has for advertising on their bus shelters. So there's a different layer. What this is the ordinance that puts the zoning in place to allow it. And there might be there's some more specific things, and there might be some questions for the RTC folks as to those specific policies of how the city manages who gets to be on there and how the whole program works. So that's separate from the zoning. So again, here's kind of what the bus shelter looks like. One of these panels is approximately the 4x6 area that would be the permitted sign area. As noted, it's in the regulations. Proposed regulations, there would only be a sign permitted on one side of the bus shelter. And there was quite a bit of discussion about this, actually, about safety and visibility, and it would not necessarily be this front panel, but I think they would look at it on a case-by-case basis, depending on where the bus shelter is located, which side makes sense for visibility, which side makes sense for safety and visibility of people sitting in there. We also, I think this is included in your packet, we've mapped where existing bus shelters are. Oh, it's existing and proposed. The existing ones are in red, proposed in blue, and that's proposed so far. I think they're in their program. Obviously, we want to keep adding bus shelters, but these are the ones that are planned now, with the red ones being existing, blue, proposed. And I have an X through the one in this case of the existing ones in this the northern half of the city where it wouldn't meet the criteria, and I think that's because it's near a residentially zoned property. And so if, just to kind of orient, this is the northern half. You could probably see the freeways, Carson Street and Highway 50 East, and kind of moving to the south portion of Carson City and going down into Douglas County, some other ones. And again, there's one on Coontz Lane that wouldn't meet it because it's near a residential zone, but you see where the other bus shelters are.
So excuse me, Lee, let me just clarify something. In the language having to do with where these signs are going to be prohibited, you mentioned residential zoning districts. What about districts that have multiple zoning? Residential office, for example. Would that also be included as a prohibition? Now, there's some overlays. I mean, the residential office area on the west side of town is also within, most of that I think is within the historic district, so there would be a preclusion.
That's probably true that most of it is in the historic district, so it wouldn't be allowed there anyway. And this, you know, off the top of my head, I'd have to look up the zoning code. I think the residential office zoning district is listed as a non-residential district. So elsewhere, you know, I can look. I'd have to get online here and look that up. But it is. They're classified as residential and non-residential in the code already. So it would be following that designation unless you had some specific concern about another zoning designation that might be included in the non-residential that you think shouldn't be like residential office, perhaps.
Right.
Although, as you said, most of our residential office zoning is within the historic district on the west side of Carson Street.
You know, it may not become an issue, but if there is a portion of the residentially office, the residential office zone area that is not overlaid by the historic district, that may become an issue. In other words, do we treat it as an office location or as a residential location for purposes of permitting advertising for bus shelters should ever be installed? Just something to be thought. I don't think it's a real issue at this point, Lee, but you may want to give some thought to it.
Well, I think we could, if that is a concern, we can exclude the residential office. I could find out between first and second reading at least, if not right now.
That's fine.
If residential office is a concern, that's probably an inappropriate place. I can affirm that it is, in fact, excluded by this or added as an exclusion.
Okay. Thank you. Go ahead. That's it.
And we'll be available, and Patrick and Ken will be available for questions on the ordinance.
Okay. Well, Patrick and Ken, did you want to make a presentation or just respond to questions?
No, I just add only a little bit because Ari did a wonderful job. I just want to note that indeed included
and limited to 24 square feet per bus shelter, which is basically a 6x4 sign, the size of one of the bus shelter panels. And I would also note they would be subject to the policies that the RTC has for advertising on their bus shelters. So there's a different layer. This is the ordinance that puts the zoning in place to allow it. And there's some more specific things, and there might be some questions for the RTC folks as to those specific policies of how the city manages who gets to be on there and how the whole program works. So that's separate from the zoning. So again, here's kind of what the bus shelter looks like. One of these panels is approximately the 4x6 area that would be the permitted sign area. As noted, it's in the proposed regulations, there would only be a sign permitted on one side of the bus shelter. And there was quite a bit of discussion about this, actually, about safety and visibility, and it would not necessarily be this front panel, but I think they would look at it on a case-by-case basis, depending on where the bus shelter is located, which side makes sense for visibility, which side makes sense for safety and visibility of people sitting in there. We also, I think this is included in your packet, we've mapped where existing bus shelters are. Oh, existing and proposed. The existing ones are in red, proposed in blue, and that's proposed so far. I think they're in their program. Obviously, we want to keep adding bus shelters, but these are the ones that are planned now, with the red ones being existing, blue proposed. And I have an X through the one in this case of the existing ones in this the northern half of the city where it wouldn't meet the criteria, and I think that's because it's near a residentially zoned property. And so if, just to kind of orient, this is the northern half. You could probably see the freeways, Carson Street and Highway 50 East, and kind of moving to the south portion of Carson City and going down into Douglas County, some other ones. And again, there's one on Koontz Lane that wouldn't meet it because it's near a residential zone, but you see where the other bus shelters are.
So excuse me, Lee, let me just clarify something. In the language having to do with where these signs are going to be prohibited, you mentioned residential zoning districts. What about districts that have multiple zoning? Residential office, for example. Would that also be included as a prohibition? Now, there's some overlays. I mean, the residential office area on the west side of town is also within, most of that I think is within the historic district, so there would be a preclusion.
That's probably true that most of it is in the historic district, so it wouldn't be allowed there anyway. And this, you know, off the top of my head, I'd have to look up the zoning code. I think the residential office zoning district is listed as a non-residential district. So elsewhere, you know, I can look. I'd have to get online here and look that up. But they're classified as residential and non-residential in the code already. So it would be following that designation unless you had some specific concern about another zoning designation that might be included in the non-residential that you think shouldn't be like residential office, perhaps.
Right.
Although, as you said, most of our residential office zoning is within the historic district on the west side of Carson Street.
You know, it may not become an issue, but if there is a portion of the residentially office, the residential office zone area that is not overlaid by the historic district, that may become an issue. In other words, do we treat it as an office location or as a residential location for purposes of permitting advertising for bus shelters should ever be installed? Just something to be thought. I don't think it's a real issue at this point, Lee, but you may want to give some thought to it.
Well, I think we could, if that is a concern, we can exclude the residential office. I could find out between first and second reading at least, if not right now.
That's fine.
If residential office is a concern, that's probably an inappropriate place. I can affirm that it is, in fact, excluded by this or added as an exclusion.
Okay. Thank you. Go ahead. That's it.
And we'll be available, and Patrick and Ken will be available for questions on the ordinance.
Okay. Well, Patrick and Ken, did you want to make a presentation or just respond to questions?
No, I just add only a little bit because Ari did a wonderful job. I just want to note that indeed included in your packet is a policy that was adopted by the RTC in, as noted here, May of 2010, before we began an advertising program on the sides of the buses themselves. And I just want to note that we've entered into a contract with Nevada Appeal to actually do the selling of the advertising, and that has been extremely successful. We have received revenues, and those revenues are treated as appropriately as non-federal funds, which allow us to leverage other federal funds. And should this proposal be adopted, we would go back to the RTC and seek an amendment to our contract with the Nevada Appeal to extend this program.
I understand we have people standing in line for the opportunity to advertise on these shelters.
As it turns out, the Nevada Appeal has been very successful in selling the advertising even for longer periods of time, and we may consider our rates in the future as necessary.
That's great. Molly.
So the need for doing this would be to generate revenue?
Yes, this is a common practice by transit operators throughout the country, and indeed the desire is based in a desire to have revenue that would supplant some of the need for general fund revenue, which is currently the local source of funds for the transit system.
And do we need that revenue?
Absolutely. We have been facing decreasing revenues from the general fund continuously over the last several years with the city's financial conditions, and any revenue that we can generate through this means would be extremely useful.
Then how did you designate which ones are residential and which ones would be non-residential by the maps? You know, you see the ones in red, and there's a few of them that I do have some concerns on. And so I wasn't quite sure how, like, for example, the one coming out of Marion Avenue, that is, so it's off of Long. It would be the corner of Long and Marion. And I know the Senior Citizen Center is right there, and then there's the assistant living residential. But the one right coming out seems pretty, so was there a foot, you know, so
100
feet away? That one would concern me. I don't know if 100 feet is enough.
Can I ask a question? What would be the concern? I guess I'm having a hard time following why that would be a concern.
Because I'm not quite sure that I would like a billboard looking coming out of my residential area for the advertising.
But again, I don't think there's, that there's residential there, though. I guess I'm trying to think of, because it is a senior center. It's, you know, there's commercial stuff around there.
I'm not talking the one of the senior center. There's the one going south or north. I mean the north. I'm talking the one that's coming at the corner of Marion Avenue and Long. Do you see where I'm talking?
No, which one? Yeah,
that one right there. That one right there.
Yeah, I believe that's, Ken Smithson, Transit Square, I think.
So it's actually on Long Street, is that correct? On the north side of Long Street?
It is on Long Street.
By the senior-oriented housing on the north side of Long Street, just to the east of the health department? Is that correct?
No, it's going more east. Yeah. So the one that is further up from there is the one that is right in front of the senior. Right. The assistant, it's the one further going east of that.
And I believe that should actually be over near Carson Plaza instead of where it's shown on this map.
Yeah, to the west of the stub. Is that correct?
No, further east.
Oh, further east. Oh,
okay. And this is just, oh no, it's an existing shelter. Yeah, it's one of the existing.
Yeah, we have the one at the, I see. That is, that may be the shelter that's at the Autumn Village that was not, it's not one of the city shelters, but it's got a bus stop sign on it. It was constructed by the entity there, and we put a bus stop sign on it. However, we do have one of our shelters that's been installed at Carson Plaza, which is closer to Russell.
Let me just, for clarity's sake, Ken, my recollection is, what is the advertising commitment?
It is a policy that was adopted by the RTC in, as noted here, May of 2010, before we began an advertising program on the sides of the buses themselves. And I just want to note that we've entered into a contract with Nevada Appeal to actually do the selling of the advertising, and that has been extremely successful. We have received revenues, and those revenues are treated as appropriately as non-federal funds, which allow us to leverage other federal funds. And should this proposal be adopted, we would go back to the RTC and seek an amendment to our contract with the Nevada Appeal to extend this program.
I understand we have people standing in line for the opportunity to advertise on these shelters.
As it turns out, the Nevada Appeal has been very successful in selling the advertising even for longer periods of time, and we may consider our rates in the future as necessary.
That's great. Molly.
So the need for doing this would be to generate revenue?
Yes, this is a common practice by transit operators throughout the country, and indeed the desire is based in a desire to have revenue that would supplant some of the need for general fund revenue, which is currently the local source of funds for the transit system.
And do we need that revenue?
Absolutely. We have been facing decreasing revenues from the general fund continuously over the last several years with the city's financial conditions, and any revenue that we can generate through this means would be extremely useful.
Then how did you designate which ones are residential and which ones would be non-residential by the maps? You know, you see the ones in red, and there's a few of them that I do have some concerns on, and so I wasn't quite sure how. Like, for example, the one coming out of Marion Avenue, that is, so it's off of Long. It would be the corner of Long and Marion. And I know the Senior Citizen Center is right there, and then there's the assisted living residential. But the one right coming out seems pretty, so was there a foot, you know, so
100
feet away? That one would concern me. I don't know if 100 feet is enough.
Can I ask a question? What would be the concern? I guess I'm having a hard time following why that would be a concern.
Because I'm not quite sure that I would like a billboard looking coming out of my residential area for the advertising.
But again, I don't think there's, I don't know that there's residential there, though. I guess I'm trying to think of, because it is a senior center. It's, you know, there's commercial stuff around there.
I'm not talking the one of the seniors. There's the one going south or north. I mean the north. I'm talking the one that's coming at the corner of Marion Avenue and Long. Do you see where I'm talking?
No, which one? Yeah,
that one right there. That one right there.
Yeah, I believe that's. Yeah, Ken Smithson, Transquare. I think so. It's actually on Long Street. Is that correct? On the north side of Long Street.
It is on Long Street.
By the senior-oriented housing on the north side of Long Street, just to the east of the health department. Is that correct?
No. It's going more east. Yeah. So the one that is further up from there is the one that is right in front of the senior. Right. The assistant. It's the one further going east of that.
And I believe that should actually be over near Carson Plaza instead of where it's shown on this map.
Yeah, to the west of the stub. Is that correct?
No, further east.
Oh, further east. Oh,
okay. And this is just, oh no, it's an existing shelter. Yeah, it's one of the existing.
Yeah, we have the one at the, I see. That is, that may be the shelter that's at Autumn Village that was not, it's not one of the city shelters, but it's got a bus stop sign on it. It was constructed by the entity there, and we put a bus stop sign on it. However, we do have one of our shelters that's been installed at Carson Plaza, which is closer to Russell.
Let me just, for clarity's sake, Ken, my recollection is, what is the advertising commitment by people who choose to advertise on these bus shelters? I mean, is it an annual contract that's signed with the appeal?
Depends on the advertiser. Sometimes they just want to do 1 month. Most of the ones that have chosen to advertise on the buses have committed for 1 year.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And do we have the flexibility within our advertising agreement with the appeal to remove these shelters from consideration with respect to shelter advertising if we receive a lot of negative feedback from people who may be outside of that 100-foot setback but who may feel that the advertising is offensive, visually offensive in some way? Do we have that discretion within our contract?
I think so. We can certainly write that into the amendment to the contract that we have with them currently.
Okay.
We're waiting for this process to be resolved before we move forward on any amendment to the contract.
Well, I know we've placed some fairly significant limitations on, you know, I mean, the RTC ruminated over this for quite some time in terms of, you know, what sort of advertising should be precluded on the buses as well as the shelters. So we're hopeful that it won't be offensive. But as Patrick says, it's important that we relieve the general fund of the ongoing obligation to provide, I guess it's been on an average $300,000 a year to support our JAC system, which has become an extraordinarily, in my opinion, extraordinarily important facility within our city.
Supervisor Aldean?
Yes.
Just to make sure I was completely clear, and the goal is to reduce the dependence upon the
right.
general fund. I'm not supposing that this would completely
No,
replace.
No, no, and I'm not anticipating that.
Clear.
But between the advertising on the bus, I mean, we've attempted, the RTC has been very aggressive about looking for other sources of income, and I'm not under the false impression that somehow our advertising program is going to completely eliminate the need for general fund support. No, sweat's pouring off.
Absolutely sure that it was clear.
No, I understand that completely. But as long as we have, you know, sufficient flexibility within our contract with the appeal to respond, you know, if we get an outpouring of criticism because of the location of these advertising panels, then that gives us the flexibility to discontinue using them in the future if necessary. John, I think you're next.
I read all the information provided and answers most of my questions. I'd like you to think about it, and I'm not suggesting we do it right now, but tasteful electronic signs might be something that you need to consider in the future. There's lots of advantages to them, not the bright ones that light up the street, but enough light where the shelter now becomes safer because there's a light there inside the shelter. And also the future of signs, that you probably get a larger return on your investment for an electronic sign that maybe morphs into different things. So just think about it. I mean, while they're prohibited now, I don't know that they, as signage changes, I think they may become more and more of what people want in the future and generate more revenue.
There was a bit of discussion about that at the Planning Commission as well and with them. And I think right now, as they've said, there's no plan to bring electricity, and that's a whole different thing. What we've tried to do with the ordinance is be consistent with what we make other off-premise signs do with billboards, and that is no flashing, moving, rotating electronic signs. So that, just to say that's the purpose of it right now. That's not to say that in the future, as things change, and these are certainly smaller size, these aren't billboards, these aren't large billboards, that could change. So point taken, but that's kind of the purpose of the way it's set up now.
Yeah, the change of the billboards on Highway 50 going up Spooner to electronic signs, they're as tasteful as the old ones that would get ripped up by the wind and not be changed timely and that sort of thing. And I think we don't need to preclude future advances on these particular shelters.
Now, Supervisor McKenna, if I may, we have not had a significant issue regarding the interior, the lack of interior lighting on the shelters, because we don't provide true night service right now. We're done by 6:30 p.m. If at some point we do provide evening service, then we may very well be looking at solar panels with interior lighting, and that would open up a whole new ball game. But right now, it hasn't been a significant issue.
Sure. Pat, in your regulations for your billboards, have you considered any
people who choose to advertise on these bus shelters? I mean, is it an annual contract that's signed with the appeal?
Depends on the advertiser. Sometimes they just want to do 1 month. Most of the ones that have chosen to advertise on the buses have committed for 1 year.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And do we have the flexibility within our advertising agreement with the appeal to remove these shelters from consideration with respect to shelter advertising if we receive a lot of negative feedback from people who may be outside of that 100-foot setback but who may feel that the advertising is offensive, visually offensive in some way? Do we have that discretion within our contract?
I think so. We can certainly write that into the amendment to the contract that we have with them currently.
Okay. Okay.
We're waiting for this process to be resolved before we move forward on any amendment to the contract.
Well, I know we've placed some fairly significant limitations on, believe me, the RTC ruminated over this for quite some time in terms of, what sort of advertising should be precluded on the buses as well as the shelters. So we're hopeful that it won't be offensive. But as Patrick says, it's important that we relieve the general fund of the ongoing, at some point, the ongoing obligation to provide, I guess it's been on an average $300,000 a year to support our JAC system, which has become an extraordinarily, in my opinion, extraordinarily important facility within our city.
Supervisor Aldean?
Yes.
Just to make sure I was completely clear, and the goal is to reduce the dependence upon the
right.
General fund. I'm not supposing that this would completely
no
replace.
No, and I'm not anticipating
sure
that, but between the advertising on the bus, I mean, we've attempted, the RTC has been very aggressive about looking for other sources of income, and I'm not under the false impression that somehow our advertising program is going to completely eliminate the need for general fund support. Sweat's pouring off.
Absolutely sure that it was clear.
No, I understand that completely. But as long as we have, sufficient flexibility within our contract with the appeal to respond, if we get an outpouring of criticism because of the location of these advertising panels, then that gives us the flexibility to discontinue using them in the future if necessary. John, I think you're next.
I read all the information provided and answers most of my questions. I'd like you to think about it, and I'm not suggesting we do it right now, but tasteful electronic signs might be something that you need to consider in the future. There's lots of advantages to them, not the bright ones that light up the street, but enough light where the shelter now becomes safer because there's a light there inside the shelter. And also the future of signs, that you probably get a larger return on your investment for an electronic sign that maybe morphs into different things. So just think about it. I mean, while they're prohibited now, I don't know that they, as signage changes, I think they may become more and more of what people want in the future and generate more revenue.
there was a bit of discussion about that at the Planning Commission as well and with them. And I think right now, as they've said, there's no plan to bring electricity, and that's a whole different thing. What we've tried to do with the ordinance is be consistent with what we make other off-premise signs do with billboards, and that is no flashing, moving, rotating electronic signs. So that, just to say that's the purpose of it right now. That's not to say that in the future, as things change, and these are certainly smaller size, these aren't billboards, these aren't large billboards, that could change. So point taken, but that's kind of the purpose of the way it's set up now.
Yeah, the change of the billboards on Highway 50 going up Spooner to electronic signs, they're as tasteful as the old ones that would get ripped up by the wind and not be changed timely and that sort of thing. And I think we don't need to preclude future advances on these particular shelters.
Now, Supervisor McKenna, if I may, we have not had a significant issue regarding the interior, the lack of interior lighting on the shelters, because we don't provide true night service right now. We're done by 6:30 p.m. If at some point we do provide evening service, then we may very well be looking at solar panels with interior lighting, and that would open up a whole new ball game. But right now, it hasn't been a significant issue.
Karen?
Pat, in your regulations for your billboards, have you considered any sort of consistent format that everybody has to follow besides the size, maybe edging in your colors or whatever it is?
I think the consistency, as you mentioned, we looked at was the framing, as far as having a 4x6 frame and working within that. As far as we're not actually associating any of our logos inside of the area that would be advertised, we are letting the Nevada Appeal currently with our contract with them work on the graphics development with each of the individual advertisers.
I would suggest that you determine the direction of the prevailing wind and insist that the sign be installed on that side of the shelter. The one unfortunate thing about these shelters, they're very attractive, but they don't provide a lot of protection from inclement weather because they are perforated, and so you can...
It's a balance between the screening of the wind, but also sure. For safety purposes, allowing some visual through there, of course.
I understand. Okay.
And then not having glass that is as fragile.
I was actually suggesting that tongue-in-cheek, but... I do have, Lee, on 4.8.7, subparagraph A, I think we're quoting from subsection 4.5.1, signs on trees, shrubs, traffic control signs. I think we need to include all of the verbiage, because what we're dealing with is advertising on structure within the public right-of-way, and that's been omitted from the language. I think it needs to read subsection 4.5.1, signs on trees, shrubs, traffic control signs, or support structures, utility poles, or any structure within the public right-of-way. Because if you don't include structures within the public right-of-way, the reference to this particular subsection really doesn't seem to be terribly relevant to what we're doing, because that's the provision that we are basically amending by virtue of this change. It's just
so
a matter
you're saying
of,
you use that's the full title of
4.5.1,
right. What you just said?
Right.
If that, okay, well, we can make that.
Because the reference to structures within the right-of-way is germane to what we're discussing.
The intent was just to use the title of that put the exact title of that subsection right there, so we'll make sure.
Okay, if you could just check
to make
sure
that's... Not necessarily do the exhaustive list, but it's...
That's contained in the entire sub, the title of that particular section, and it makes it more relevant to what we're discussing. And then subsection D, sign permits may be required. Have we determined whether or not they will be required?
No, because it depends. If it's that structure in the city right of way does not require a building permit, and that's what that means. Sign permit is a building permit. It's through the building department. If they start putting lights in there, if they exterior lighting, then it may require a building permit. If it's constructed on private property, like on a part of a house, like part of an apartment complex, it requires a building permit. So that's why it says it may as required by the building code or other city code.
Okay. All right. Any further comments from members of the board? All right. If not, I'll open this up to public comment. Maurice, any comments? Okay. Seeing none, we'll bring it back for further discussion and or a motion. John, do you want to make a motion?
Sure.
It's 120, bill number 120.
Yeah, I got it right here. Okay. I move to introduce on first reading bill number 120, an ordinance amending Carson City Municipal Code Title 18, Appendix Development Standards, Division 4 Signs, Section 4.8, Requirements for Billboards and Off-Premises Signs by adding a new subsection 4.8.7, Off-Premises Signs on City Bus Shelters to allow advertising on passenger bus shelters subject to specific criteria.
Second.
That will be with the additions?
With all the comments, subject to all the comments on the record, if that's satisfactory. Yeah. Molly? Okay. All right. We have a second. Any comments on the question? All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. All right. Congratulations. Russ Carpenter will be very pleased. He's
sure
a member of RTC who has been very, very adamant about the need to expand our revenues through advertising. So, okay. All right. Thank you, gentlemen, very much. We'll move on to item 13, non-action items, capital project status report. Andy, do you have anything to share with us? You're going to lead us through it.
Consistent format that everybody has to follow, besides the size, maybe edging in your colors or whatever it is.
I think the consistency that, as you mentioned, we looked at was the was kind of the framing, you know, as far as having a 4x6 frame and working within that. As far as we're not actually associating any of our logos inside of the area that would be advertised. We are letting the Nevada Appeal, you know, currently with our contract with them, work on the graphics development with each of the individual advertisers.
I would suggest that you determine the direction of the prevailing wind and insist that the sign be installed on that side of the shelter. The one unfortunate thing about these shelters, they're very attractive, but they don't provide a lot of protection from inclement weather because they are perforated. And so you can...
It's a balance between the screening of the wind, but also
sure.
for safety purposes, allowing some... visual
no,
through there, of
I
course,
understand. Okay.
And then not having glass that is as fragile.
I was actually suggesting that tongue-in-cheek, but I do have, Lee, on 4.8.7, subparagraph A, I think we're quoting from subsection 4.5.1, signs on trees, shrubs, traffic control signs. I think we need to include all of the verbiage because what we're dealing with is advertising on structure within the public right-of-way, and that's been omitted from the language. I think it needs to read subsection 4.5.1, signs on trees, shrubs, traffic control signs, or support structures, utility poles, or any structure within the public right-of-way. Because if you don't include structures within the public right-of-way, the reference to this particular subsection really doesn't seem to be terribly relevant to what we're doing, because that's the provision that we are basically amending by virtue of this change. It's just
so you're saying you use that's the full title of 4.5.1,
right.
What you just said?
Right.
If that, okay, well, we can make that.
Because the reference to structures within the right-of-way is germane to what we're discussing.
The intent was just to use the title of that put the exact title of that subsection right there, so we'll make sure.
Okay, if you could just check
it's
to
not,
make
not,
sure
not
that's...
Not necessarily do the exhaustive list, but it's...
That's contained in the entire sub,
okay.
The title
okay.
of that particular section,
okay.
And it makes it more relevant to what we're discussing. And then subsection D, sign permits may be required. Have we determined whether or not they will be required?
No, because it depends. If it's in the, if it's that structure in the city right-of-way does not require a building permit. And that's what that means. Sign permit is a building permit. It's through the building department. If they start putting lights in there, if they exterior lighting, then
mm-hmm.
it may require a building permit. If it's constructed on private property, like on a part of a house, like part of an apartment complex,
mm-hmm.
it requires a building permit. So that's why it says that's
so
why
you
it says
maintain
may.
Some
it may it may as required by the building code or other
okay.
city code.
Okay. All right. Any further comments from members of the board? All right. If not, I'll open this up to public comment. Maurice, any comments? Okay, seeing none. We'll bring it back for further discussion and or a motion. John, do you want to make a motion?
Sure.
It's 120, bill number 120.
Yeah, I got it right here. Okay. I move to introduce on first reading bill number 120, an ordinance amending Carson City Municipal Code Title 18, Appendix Development Standards, Division 4 Signs, Section 4.8, Requirements for Billboards and Off-Premises Signs by adding a new subsection 4.8.7, off-premises signs on city bus shelters to allow advertising on passenger bus shelters subject to specific criteria.
Second.
That will be with the additions?
With all the comments, subject to all the comments on the record, if that's satisfactory. Yeah. Molly? Okay. All right. We have a second. Any comments on the question? All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. All right. Congratulations. Russ Carpenter will be very pleased. He's
sure
a member of RTC who has been very, very adamant about the need to expand our revenues through advertising. So, okay. All right. Thank you, gentlemen, very much. We'll move on to item 13, non-action items, capital project status report. Andy, do you have anything to share with us? You're going to lead us through it.
I tried to get all this time. Will there be a test?
Maybe, Randy, you can just touch on the highlights.
You know, while Andy's handing this out, a question came up as whether or not, you know, we've got this set up on an ivory board meeting, and a lot of things don't change biweekly. Would it be reasonable to do this to once a month, maybe the first or last meeting of the month instead of biweekly? Just kind of, we just don't see a lot of change that rapidly. So,
yeah, especially as we get into the winter period, where projects are all going to really, really, really slow down. I'm thinking what we ought to maybe do is wait till January 1st and then just do it monthly from there on out.
Well, I have no problem with that. Any objections by members of the board?
Okay. I mean, the idea originally was with all the water projects and the scope and the breadth of those and all the people they were touching is to come here and report on those. Those are going to all be pretty well done here shortly.
Okay.
And we don't really have any large projects that are going to be impacting the community like we've had in the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. So. Lots of small projects that are listed here. That's really what I wanted to bring to your attention. Certainly, the majority of these projects are the big water regional water project. But there's a lot of other smaller projects that are on here that I thought we ought to bring to your attention just so you see. A lot of them are regional transportation projects, which RTC sees every month. But I thought we ought to bring it forward to the board as well so they could see what's going on there. And then there's a bunch of parks projects as well. And I think what we will do is just provide this list to you monthly when we come, and then you can ask questions about any of that. And try to get it in your packet ahead of time so that you have a chance to ask questions.
Well, Andy, what you might want to do is also highlight any significant changes.
Okay.
You know, because if nothing's changing significantly, there's no reason for us to go over this line by line.
We do plan on making a lengthy presentation on the water system and what's going on with the water system probably in January or early February. Certainly, that's our biggest project and continues to be our biggest project and will be for another year or two. But you need to see what's transpired, what are the changes. There are some big changes that are taking place in the system and what's being planned, some changes in budgets. We're seeing some of the costs increase down in Douglas County on some of the big pump stations and stuff rather dramatically. That's going to impact what we do here a little bit. And we need to bring you all up to speed as to what that means for us, and we will do that in early January. We did the wastewater treatment plant presentation to you back in the summer. We want to do a presentation on the distribution system for water as well, besides the big water project, and what the condition and assessment of that is. And we also are putting together same kind of presentation. We'll do that a little bit later in the year next year on the sewer collection and reuse system so you can see the issues that are starting to brew. It's just infrastructure issues. It's just like anywhere else in the nation. You know, there's costs that are going to be coming, and we need to be cognizant that what are we doing and what's the condition, what can we expect in the future. So we'll be bringing those to you as major presentations and things for you to be considering, and then those will have budget implications, obviously, in the future as well. So
we haven't had any recent force majeures in connection with a lot
of
projects.
Yeah, we haven't had any okay. further right. information related to that.
Okay. Andy, just one project of particular interest to me is the Gateway Signage Project. Have they actually commenced the site work?
Yes, the foundations are under construction. They should be poured this week.
At all three locations? Or just the south end?
The south and east.
East,
I think.
Okay, good.
I'm not sure
good.
About the other one.
So we're still tentatively expecting that project to be completed just after the first of the year?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Should
all
be.
Right. Terrific. That's great. Supervisor McKenna.
The on the water project / streets Edmonds and Fairview, is that a permanent realignment of Edmonds?
Yes.
So yeah, there won't be the.
We're actually we went through that intersection with the water line, and as a result, that intersection, all the curb work in there was deteriorated, so we needed to replace it, and we had a project a long time ago to realign that intersection and to add a free turn and merge lane, and rather than just the merge lane there was not adequate, was right. not safe, and so it's going to be a much longer merge lane, improve the safety there quite a bit.
Okay, so the merge lane is coming back. Is
yeah.
my real question.
Yeah.
Okay.
It'll be a much safer merge lane.
And you're out of the Conti.
Yeah, we're
out of that area.
Yeah, we're doing a lot of. There's still a lot of
all this time.
Will there be a test?
Maybe Randy, you can just touch on the highlights.
You know, while Andy's handing this out, a question came up as to whether or not, you know, we've got this set up on an ivory board meeting, and a lot of things don't change biweekly. Would it be reasonable to do this to once a month, maybe the first or last meeting of the month instead of biweekly? We just don't see a lot of change mm-hmm. that rapidly. So
yeah, especially as we get into the winter period, where projects are all going to really, really, really slow down. I'm thinking what we ought to maybe do is wait till January 1st and then just do it monthly from there on out.
No, I have no problem with that. Any objections by members of the board? Okay.
I mean, the idea originally was with all the water projects and the scope and the breadth of those and all the people they were touching is to come here and report on those. Those are going to all be pretty well done here
sure.
shortly.
Okay.
And we don't really have any large projects that are going to be impacting the community like we've had in the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. So. Lots of small projects that are listed here. That's really what I wanted to bring to your attention. Certainly, the majority of these projects are the big water regional water project. But there's a lot of other smaller projects that are on here that I thought we ought to bring to your attention just so you see. A lot of them are regional transportation projects which RTC sees every month. But I thought we ought to bring it forward to the board as well so they could see what's going on there. And then there's a bunch of parks projects as well. And I think what we will do is just provide this list to you monthly when we come, and then you can ask questions about any of that. And try to get it in your packet ahead of time so that you have
sure.
a chance to ask questions.
Well, Andy, what you might want to do is also highlight any significant changes.
Okay.
You know, because
okay.
If nothing's changing significantly, there's no reason for us to go over this line by line.
We do plan on making a lengthy presentation on the water system and what's going on with the water system probably in January or early February. Certainly, that's our biggest project and continues to be our biggest project and will be for another year or two. But you need to see what's transpired, what are the changes. There are some big changes that are taking place in the system and what's being planned, some changes in budgets. We're seeing some of the costs increase down in Douglas County on some of the big pump stations and stuff rather dramatically. That's going to impact what we do here a little bit. And we need to bring you all up to speed as to what that means for us, and we will do that in early January. We did the wastewater treatment plant presentation to you back in the summer. We want to do a presentation on the distribution system for water as well, besides the big water project, and what the condition and assessment of that is. And we also are putting together same kind of presentation. We'll do that a little bit later in the year, next year, on the sewer collection and reuse system. So you can see the issues that are starting to brew. It's just infrastructure issues. It's just like anywhere else in the nation. You know, there's costs that are going to be coming, and we need to be cognizant that what are we doing and what's the condition, what can we expect in the future. So we'll be bringing those to you. major presentations and things for you to be considering, and then those will have budget implications, obviously, in the future as well. So
we haven't had any recent force majeures in connection with the water project.
Yeah, we haven't had any okay. further right. information related to that.
Okay. Andy, just one project of particular interest to me is the Gateway signage project. Have they actually commenced the site work?
Yes, the foundations are under construction. They should be poured this week.
At all three locations? Or just the south end?
The south and east.
East, I think. Okay, but good.
I'm not sure
good.
About the other one.
So we're still tentatively expecting that project to be completed just after the first of the year?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Should
all
be.
Right. Terrific. That's great. Supervisor McKenna.
On the water project of slash streets Edmonds and Fairview, is that a permanent realignment of Edmonds?
Yes.
We
went through that intersection with the water line, and as a result, that intersection, all the curb work in there was deteriorated, so we needed to replace it. And we had a project a long time ago to realign that intersection and to add a free turn and merge lane, and rather than just the merge lane there was not adequate, was right. not safe, and so it's going to be a much longer merge lane, improve the safety there quite a bit.
Okay, so the merge lane is coming back. Is
yeah.
my real question.
Yeah.
Okay.
It'll be a much safer merge lane.
And you're out of the Conti,
we're
out of that area?
Yeah, we're doing there's still a lot of cleanup in that area. We still have a few driveways to fix, but, yeah, we're pretty well done with that area as well as along Snyder as well.
Okay, and is there going to be any disruption of Fairview basically while school is on, say, till May?
Yeah, there will be a little bit of disruption. We're still working with a contractor on where they go through and tie the water line through the roundabout. That's a problematic piece of the thing. One of the considerations of the contractor, he's not required to do it, but one of the considerations, because of all the traffic control that will take place, because he has to keep the intersection open and operating, is that he may bore the line through that area. So he hasn't made a decision yet, but that won't be done until spring.
Is the city, I think I know the answer. Is the city involved in the change that the school district is making to Eagle Valley Middle School to put in a parent drop-off?
Yes, we've been working with the school district on that.
Okay, that's all, no problems with it, that sort of thing?
Not that I've been aware of.
Okay. Anything else we should know about? I guess, is there any problems out there? Sewer breaks?
You heard
breaks?
At your last meeting about the couple of the legal issues that are going on with a couple of projects. Those are going to take some time to play out, probably a year or so at this point, is our guess. But those are the main issues. I mean, we've got a lot of little projects that are finishing up. The salt and cinder building, you see the big structure out at the corporate yard that's going up, but hopefully that'll be done early January, and the solar panels will all be put on. It's being financed and paid for as a result of the solar grant that we got. We weren't able to go forward with the solar grants at the sheriff's building and the courts building because we didn't have the money in the general fund to match, but we were able to get special consideration and move those grants to the wastewater treatment plant, and so we're going to build a much larger solar array at the wastewater treatment plant, which will reduce our costs over time there. So we'll spend about $1.5 million on solar at the wastewater treatment plant, which will cut our costs for energy there quite a bit. So that's the big change that we've done recently. So.
Okay, thank you, Andy. Supervisor Abed.
Andy, just a question tying into John's with Fairview and the possible impact in the spring. Silver State Charter Schools is planning to move into their facility in January. Are you going to be in conversation with them as well to make sure that it doesn't impact flows into and out of the school?
Well, Fairview, we won't be doing any work along Fairview by that area. The only part in Fairview will be the roundabout area that we would impact. And so it shouldn't affect them too much. It will affect the whole community that goes through that area, but it's certainly going to affect the middle school there. So we'll have to be cognizant of that.
Is that it, Karen? Supervisor Walt?
I had sent an email, I think, about the, well, the additional well that Douglas is going to be with this water.
Right. Minden has proposed adding another well or two in order to meet the demands of the system. They're required in our contract already meet those demands, so that's an ongoing discussion. They need it in order to have duplicity and to have backup in the system. So that's going to be a conversation that we're going to be having for the next year, is my guess.
They're asking for fiscal participation?
Yes.
Parson?
Yeah, and we haven't agreed to do any of that yet. Something we'll look at as part of the rate structure. We have to relook at all the rates that were in the initial agreement. By the agreement, it says when we get done with construction and have all the costs, then we have to relook at all the rates, and that all we will come back at some point with an amendment on that contract for all the boards to look at. So, I mean, that's a good year away, if not longer at this point.
Well, Andy, the discussion we're going to have after the first of the year is going to be comprehensive, right?
Yes, and it'll include discussions about everything that's going on. All the two big pump stations, the one that Minden's building and the one that Douglas County are building, the cost estimates that we originally did 2 or 3 years ago are significantly low compared to what we apparently the costs we think are going to come in at, in the order of $1 million or $2 million. So, and we're paying, you know, 59% of the cost, so that's a significant hit to us. That's when cleaning up in that area. We still have a few driveways to fix, but yeah, we're pretty well done with that area, as well as along Snyder as well.
Okay, and is there going to be any disruption of Fairview basically while school is on, say, till May?
Yeah, there will be a little bit of disruption. We're still working with a contractor on the where they go through and tie the water line through the roundabout. That's a problematic piece of the thing. One of the considerations of the contractor, he's not required to do it, but one of the considerations, because of all the traffic control that'll take place, because he has to keep the intersection open and operating, is that he may bore the line through that area. So he hasn't made a decision yet, but that won't be done until spring.
Is the city, I think I know the answer. Is the city involved in the change that the school district is making to Eagle Valley Middle School to put in a parent drop-off?
Yes, we've been working with the school district on that.
Okay, that's all, no problems with it, that sort of thing?
Not that I've been aware of.
Okay. Anything else we should know about? I guess, is there any problems out there? Sewer
breaks? You
heard
at your last meeting about the couple of the legal issues that are going on with a couple of projects. Those are going to take some time to play out, you know, probably a year or so at this point, is our guess. But those are the main issues. I mean, we've got a lot of little projects that are finishing up. The salt and cinder building, you see the big structure out at the corporate yard that's going up. But, you know, hopefully that'll be done early December, early January, and the solar panels will all be put on it. You know, it's being financed and paid for as a result of the solar grant that we got. We weren't able to go forward with the solar grants at the sheriff's building and the courts building because we didn't have the money in the general fund to match, but we were able to get special consideration and move those grants to the wastewater treatment plant, and so we're going to build a much larger solar array at the wastewater treatment plant, which will, you know, reduce our costs over time there. So we'll spend about $1.5 million on solar at the wastewater treatment plant, which will cut our costs for energy there quite a bit. So that's the big change that we've done just recently. So.
Okay, thank you, Andy. Supervisor Levin.
Andy, just a question tying into John's with Fairview and the possible impact in the spring. Silver State Charter Schools is planning to move into their facility in January. Are you going to be in conversation with them as well to make sure that it doesn't impact flows into and out of the school?
Well, Fairview, we won't be doing any work along Fairview by that area. The only part in Fairview will be the roundabout area that we would impact. And so it shouldn't affect them too much. It will affect the whole community that goes through that area, but it's certainly going to affect the middle school there. So we'll have to be cognizant of that.
Is that it, Karen? Supervisor Walt?
I had sent an email, I think, about the, well, the additional well that Douglas is going to be with this water.
Right. Minden has proposed adding another well or two in order to meet the demands of the system. They're required in our contract already meet those demands, so that's an ongoing discussion. They need it in order to have duplicity and to have backup in the system. So that's going to be a conversation that we're going to be having for the next year, is my guess.
They're asking for fiscal participation?
Yes.
Parson?
Yeah, and we haven't agreed to do any of that yet. Something we'll look at as part of the rate structure. We have to relook at all the rates that were in the initial agreement. By the agreement, it says when we get done with construction and have all the costs, then we have to relook at all the rates, and that all we will come back at some point with an amendment on that contract for all the boards to look at. So, I mean, that's a good year away, if not longer at this point.
Well, Andy, the discussion we're going to have after the first of the year is going to be comprehensive, right?
Yes, and it'll include discussions about everything that's going on. All the two big pump stations, the one that Minden's building and the one that Douglas County are building, the cost estimates that we originally did 2 or 3 years ago are significantly low compared to what we apparently the costs we think are going to come in at, in the order of $1 million or $2 million. So, and we're paying, you know, 59% of the cost, so that's a significant hit to us. As a result, we're slowing down the balance of our projects in order to make sure that we have the monies to do that. The parts of our project we can do later on, and that's will be part of our presentation to you to show how all this work fits together. So, because we don't want to have another big budget impact.
Our revenues aren't coming in as originally anticipated.
Right.
I mean, we have to be very concerned about not overextending ourselves.
We're taking, you know, strides to reduce our budget expenditures by a significant amount. So
what you're saying is if we can get the infrastructure completed south of us, we could conceivably delay some of the infrastructure work they're proposing to do within Carson City.
Correct.
And still take advantage of the water from
the
Minden
correct.
Wells.
Yes. That's exactly okay. Right. We have a big water model that we constructed and built as a part of, it's a computer water model. We did over the course of the last several years. We now have that in-house. We don't have to run it with consultants. We run it in-house, and we have our staff trained on it, and we're running through a bunch of scenarios as to how we operate the water system if we don't do the entire piece, and if, are there any things that we need to do in order to make the system more functional, more efficient. And then additionally, the active strategy brought up an issue, something that Larry has asked us to look at, and which we're starting to do. We're putting together looking at our precipitation on a continual basis, as well as energy use, gas and power, and we're translating that to see how that affects our use of water. Is temperature and precipitation related to use of water? And it apparently it very much correlates a lot. So we will have that part of your active strategy review as well. And that also affects how we use energy for our buildings, heating our buildings when you look at the temperature and stuff. And it affects how the franchise fees are generate revenue. So we're trying to correlate that so we can start seeing cause and effect and do some prediction as a result of it. So.
Good. That would be helpful. Okay. Molly, did you have anything else? Okay. Any other questions for Andy?
I think one more thing, Shirley, on the item, or Supervisor Aldine.
That's okay.
One of the things, these projects will also be carried in active strategies on a monthly basis. So if there's any time during these intervening times, if you want to look up the status of a project, you can go into the initiative portion of the active strategies. Once we kind of get that sorted out, and you'll see the status of these carried on in there. So.
Okay. Terrific. Great. All right. Anything else, Andy?
If you have any questions.
Go ahead. Yes, John.
You're happy to give me a call.
The only other thing that came up last meeting was the status of Contry's yard there on Edmonds and in the residential zone. Has that changed any?
We anticipate it will go away with the project, and we can't anticipate another project in that area that would require a yard.
Well, the discussion
we certainly don't have any construction projects that are anticipated in that area that would require another construction yard.
Yeah, the discussion was that the residents would like it to go away now, and Contry would like to stay until they finish the Fairview portion.
Yeah, my guess is we aren't going to be able to require them to do that contractually. So we can ask them, but they can't. We can't force them, I don't think.
Please ask them.
Okay. We can do that.
And I guess this was asked previously, but is the use of private property for that sort of purpose, is that something that requires a permit, temporary use?
No, like a, like a business license or permit?
Yes.
No.
No.
It does not.
It's permitted.
We consider it part of our project. And the only time you can do that is if we have an ongoing active project in the area. Because essentially, if we can do that, that saves a lot of money. Because ultimately, you know, if a person has to be transporting equipment and materials from a long distance away, that's a dollar cost. And we've done it throughout town. I mean, you may remember discussions on the corner of Ann and Curry Street.
Yeah,
we're doing some downtown projects. So this is not unusual. It's very typical. I've not had, and I probably should talk to you offline, I guess, but I've only had one person complain. Is there more than one? Is there? I've only had one, pretty vocally, but just one. But I just, huh?
Mine was one.
Yeah. So I think it's, from a community standpoint, I hate to say that, but at some point, you know, that we kind of need maybe to sacrifice that a little bit for the betterment of the community, and then we'll move on.
I mean, it's certainly an inconvenience in the neighborhood, but the whole construction project's a giant inconvenience in the neighborhood. So.
Is the, and maybe this doesn't make a difference, is the property owner in question receiving compensation for the use of their property?
I believe they are.
I imagine they would.
I believe they're renting the property.
I know I would if I was that.
Yeah, it would be nice to have some ability, though, to scrutinize how the yard is being maintained. You know, whether or not, I don't want to get meddlesome. I mean, this is between the property owner and the company.
As a result, we're slowing down the balance of our projects in order to make sure that we have the monies to do that. The parts of our project we can do later on, and that's will be part of our presentation to you to show how all this work fits together. Because we don't want to have another big budget impact.
And I know that, you know, our revenues aren't coming in as originally anticipated.
Right.
I mean, we have to be very concerned about not overextending ourselves.
We're taking, you know, strides to reduce our budget expenditures by a significant amount. So
what you're saying is if we can get the infrastructure completed south of us, we could conceivably delay some of the infrastructure work they're proposing to do within Carson City.
Correct.
And still take advantage of the water from
the
Menden
correct.
Wells.
Yeah, that's exactly okay. Right. We have a big water model that we constructed and built as a part of, it's a computer water model. We did over the course of the last several years. We now have that in-house. We don't have to run it with consultants. We run it in-house, and we have our staff trained on it, and we're running through a bunch of scenarios as to how we operate the water system if we don't do the entire piece. And if, are there any things that we need to do in order to make the system more functional, more efficient? And then additionally, the active strategy brought up an issue, something that Larry has asked us to look at and which we're starting to do. We're putting together, we're looking at our precipitation on a continual basis as well as energy use, gas and power, and we're translating that to see how that affects our use of water. Is temperature and precipitation related to use of water? And it apparently it very much correlates a lot. So we will have that part of your active strategy review as well. And that also affects how we use energy for our buildings, heating our buildings when you look at the temperature and stuff. And it affects how the franchise fees are generate revenue. So we're trying to correlate that so we can start seeing cause and effect and do some prediction as a result of it. So.
Good. That would be helpful. Okay. Molly, did you have anything else? Okay. Any other questions for Andy?
I think one more thing, Shirley, on the item, or Supervisor Aldine.
That's okay.
That. One of the things that these projects will also be carried in active strategies on a monthly basis. So if there's any time during these intervening times, if you want to look up the status of a project, you can go into the initiative portion of the active strategies. Once we kind of get that sorted out, and you'll see the status of these carried on in there. So.
Okay. Terrific. Great. All right. Okay. Anything else, Andy?
If you have any questions,
go ahead. Yes, John.
You're happy to give me a call.
The only other thing that came up last meeting was the status of Contry's yard there on Edmonds and in the residential zone. Has that changed any?
We anticipate it'll go away with the project, and we can't anticipate another project in that area that would require a yard.
Well, the discussion was...
We certainly don't have any construction projects that are anticipated in that area that would require another construction yard in that
area. Yeah, the discussion was that the residents would like it to go away now, and Contry would like to stay until they finish the Fairview portion.
Yeah, my guess is we aren't going to be able to require them to do that contractually. So we can ask them, but they can't. We can't force them, I don't think.
Please ask them.
Okay. We can do that.
And I guess this was asked previously, but is the use of private property for that sort of purpose, is that something that requires a permit, temporary use?
No, like a, build, like a business license or permit?
Yes.
No.
No.
It does not.
It's permitted.
We consider it part of our project. And the only time you can do that is if we have an ongoing active project in the area. Because essentially, if we can do that, that saves a lot of money. Because ultimately, you know, if a person has to be transporting equipment and materials from a long distance away, that's a dollar cost. And we've done it throughout town. I mean, you may remember discussions on the corner of Ann and Curry Street.
Yeah,
we're doing some downtown projects. So this is not unusual. It's very typical. I've not had, and I probably should talk to you offline, I guess, but I've only had one person complain. Is there more than one? Is there? I've only had one pretty vocally, but just one. So I think it's, from a community standpoint, I hate to say that, but at some point, you know, that we kind of need maybe to sacrifice that a little bit for the betterment of the community, and then we'll move on.
I mean, it's certainly an inconvenience in the neighborhood, but the whole construction project's a giant inconvenience in the neighborhood. So.
Is the, and maybe this doesn't make a difference, is the property owner in question receiving compensation for the use of their property?
I believe they are.
I imagine they would. I believe they're
renting the property.
I know I would if I was that.
Yeah, it would be nice to have some ability, though, to scrutinize how the yard is being maintained, you know, whether or not I don't want to get meddlesome. I mean, this is between the property owner and the contractor, but and maybe in this case is it because it's unsightly or just because it exists, John?
Well, it's a residential neighborhood, and you have a house that looks directly on to the yard going to the west. So their view of the west is this construction yard. Mm-hmm. There's a house to the north that it's not their front yard, it's their side yard looking onto it. Across the street, there's an empty lot, so nobody complains from there. And then across Edmonds, it's the freeway. There's traffic. There's cars parked there. There's big equipment started up early in the morning. It's not conducive to a residential neighborhood. Is it a temporary inconvenience for a greater good? Yes. How temporary is temporary? That's all I'm asking about.
Right.
Makes sense. So there's no requirement for a temporary use permit. I mean, they're doing everything that's within the boundaries of the law.
But it has to be a viable city project to the benefit of the city.
Okay.
It can't be just somebody else deciding to go do that and say, well, you know, I'm going to go build a house or a structure here, and I'm going to just go ahead and do this. Then it gets to be a zoning issue. At that point, we would step in on that.
Yeah, and what people see is that at the corner of Edmonds and Fairview, there's a big open space there that you could put a construction lot, but then you'd have the cost of putting up temporary security fencing and that sort
right.
of thing
right.
versus existing chain link fence at the place where they're at and moving all the equipment and the construction trailer and K-rails and all that sort of thing that's stored there over to this new location for, what, 3 months, 4 months?
You know, we can talk to the contractor. We typically allow the contractors to use our corporate yard because we have enough space there to do marshaling for city projects and stuff. We can ask them, since especially as they move down to that end of the project, maybe they have if we give them free use of that, maybe it gives them an incentive to move off that other property. We can talk to them about it and see if it's possible.
Thank you, Andy. All right. Okay, Larry, anything to report from the city manager's office?
No, other than yes, there is. Just to give you a little bit of a brief update on the Knowledge and Discovery Center, we're still meeting with our financial advisors, JNA consultants out of Las Vegas that advise us on financial things, and we're having discussions with Wells Fargo Bank on conditions of and cost of money, that sort of thing. We're still trying to determine what makes the most sense and the options that are available to the board on financing this. It's not real simple. It's very complex, and we're trying to get through all the hoops so we can sit down with you and say, okay, option A, option B, cost option A is this, cost option B is that, and then based on that, formulate whatever nonprofit or LLC we need to formulate, because one of the issues is it taxable, non-taxable, you know, those kinds of things, and it's requiring a lot more scrutiny because it's not a traditional public-private relationship where you bond, or the city could bond, you know, a project and actually issue bonds and go construct something. So a lot of the financial institutions don't know whether to put it into a private funding category or a municipal funding category. And so their structures are built on those two activities, and we've kind of got a hybrid. And they're trying to decide how would they categorize this type of financing. And so they're wrestling with that. And we're meeting this afternoon again with JNA and Mr. Neighbors and our staff. And then we'll follow up with Wells Fargo at another meeting probably after the holidays. So it's ongoing. Not any conclusions reached yet on exactly how this will come together. Whatever's going on, just to kind of give you a briefing, you know, you've seen some of the issues I've had over concern of the financing. The monies that, the revenues that are coming in from the landfill increases are going into the general fund and are being used to help solve our financial problem as it exists today. Money is not being set aside for the Knowledge and Discovery Center project and being held in limbo. When we looked at projecting out the cost of what this project would be, we didn't see any lease payments coming in until late 2015 or 2016. The financial issues we're having today have nothing to do with the library. There are issues we have today that may impact what we do 2015 and 16, depending on how the revenues go, but that's not, in other words, we're not taking those revenues today and setting them aside. We are using them.
But Larry, some of those revenues are, I mean, there's some initial initial costs that we're going to be incurring prior to actually letting a permit for construction. So are those going to be covered, I'm assuming, from the excess revenues from the landfill fund?
No, actually, we...
And maybe in this case, is it because it's unsightly or just because it exists? John?
Well, it's a residential neighborhood, and you have a house that looks directly on to the yard going to the west. So their view of the west is this construction yard. There's a house to the north that it's not their front yard, it's their side yard looking onto it. Across the street, there's an empty lot, so nobody complains from there. And then across Edmonds, it's the freeway. There's traffic, there's cars parked there, there's big equipment started up early in the morning. It's not conducive to a residential neighborhood. Is it a temporary inconvenience for a greater good? Yes. How temporary is temporary? That's all I'm asking about.
Right.
Okay.
Makes sense.
So there's no requirement for a temporary use permit. I mean, they're doing everything that's within the boundaries of the law.
But it has to be a viable city project to the benefit of the city.
Okay.
It can't be just somebody else deciding to go do that and say, well, you know, I'm going to go build a house or a structure here, and I'm going to just go ahead and do this. Then it gets to be a zoning issue. At that point, we would step in on that.
Yeah, and what people see is that at the corner of Edmonds and Fairview, there's a big open space there that you could put a construction lot, but then you'd have the cost of putting up temporary security fencing and that sort
right.
of thing
right.
versus existing chain link fence at the place where they're at and moving all the equipment and the construction trailer and K-rails and all that sort of thing that's stored there over to this new location for... what, 3 months, 4 months?
You know, we can talk to the contractor. We typically allow the contractors to use our corporate yard because we have enough space there to do marshaling for city projects and stuff. We can ask them, especially as they move down to that end of the project, maybe they have if we give them free use of that, maybe it gives them an incentive to move off that other property. We can talk to them about it and see if it's
okay.
possible.
Thank you, Andy. All right. Okay, Larry, anything to report from the city manager's office?
No, other than on the knowledge, no, and then I report. That doesn't make sense. Yes, there is. Just to give you a little bit of a brief update on the Knowledge and Discovery Center, we're still meeting with our financial advisors, JNA consultants out of Las Vegas that advise us on financial things, and we're having discussions with Wells Fargo Bank on conditions of and cost of money, that sort of thing. We're still trying to determine what makes the most sense and the options that are available to the board on financing this. It's not real simple. It's very complex. And we're trying to get through all the hoops so we can sit down with you and say, okay, option A, option B, cost option A is this, cost option B is that. And then based on that, formulate whatever nonprofit or LLC we need to formulate, because one of the issues is it taxable, non-taxable, you know, those kinds of things. And it's requiring a lot more scrutiny because it's not a traditional public-private relationship where you bond, or the city could bond, you know, a project and actually issue bonds and go construct something. So a lot of the financial institutions don't know whether to put it into a private funding category or a municipal funding category. And so their structures are built on those two activities, and we've kind of got a hybrid, and they're trying to decide how would they categorize this type of financing. And so they're wrestling with that. And we're meeting this afternoon again with JNA and Mr. Neighbors and our staff, and then we'll follow up with Wells Fargo at another meeting probably after the holidays. So it's ongoing. Not any conclusions reached yet on exactly how this will come together. Whatever's going on, just to kind of give you a briefing, you know, you've seen some of the issues I've had over concern of the financing. The monies that, the revenues that are coming in from the landfill increases are going into the general fund and are being used to help solve our financial problem as it exists today. Money is not being set aside for the Knowledge and Discovery Center project and being held in limbo. When we looked at projecting out the cost of what this project would be, we didn't see any lease payments coming in until late 2015 or 2016. The financial issues we're having today have nothing to do with the library. There are issues we have today that may impact what we do 2015 and 16, depending on how the revenues go, but that's not, in other words, we're not taking those revenues today and setting them aside. We are using them.
But Larry, some of those revenues are, I mean, there's some initial initial costs that we're going to be incurring prior to actually letting a permit for construction. So are those going to be covered, I'm assuming, from the excess revenues from the landfill fund?
No, actually, we'd probably take those out of our capital improvement fund because it's basically capital design work. We would just, and that money set aside, committed, can't be used for anything other than capital. We could actually invest some of that to do some of the design work, and then with the backup situation from the trust saying that if we don't go forward, we get reimbursed for that amount. We see that as at a non-risk at this stage, but that won't occur until, I'm thinking whether it's next year or the year after. So we're still not going any further than kind of where we are today as far as expending a lot of money, any money. We haven't really said anything.
We're just doing our due diligence.
Yeah, and I know the Library Foundation or the Friends of the Library are out doing a lot of discussions with folks. We don't know what the status of that is yet of actual donations and stuff, so we'll be meeting with those folks to kind of see, okay, how is that going? The indications we have are that it's being very well received, that it looks very positive, that we're going to see the kinds of contributions out there that were anticipated. So.
Okay. Is that it? Okay. Any questions for Larry? All right. Any comments from members of the board? Any reports?
I have a plug.
Yes,
if you haven't bought your Nutcracker tickets, it's a great way to start the tradition. It has been a 23-year tradition. It's a great way to start the Christmas season. Friday night, Mother Chagan will be played by our mayor, Bob, and then Saturday night, Mother will be played by the sheriff and Kenny Furlong, and then Saturday...
Will she be packing that evening?
You know what? Because I did an interview with Candy Duncan, and I have to say, the last time the sheriff did it, he wasn't packing, but he danced so hard he almost tipped Mother over. So, and there's two of us underneath Mother trying to hang on, and I'm one of them. And I mean, I was hanging on because he was really dancing. And then, and Dave did the same. So Saturday or Sunday afternoon at 2, our assessor Dave Dolly plays Mother Chagan, and he kind of tears it up as well. So if you haven't, it is again Thanksgiving weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
They're getting into the groove. Okay. Another announcement: Silver and Snowflakes Festival of Lights, of course, is December 2nd. I think everybody has received their invitations. We have a lot of activities that will be going on that evening. The festivities begin at about 5:30. With the Carson City 5th grade musical students singing ensemble. So we encourage everybody to attend. It's a wonderful event, and it's been going on for many years now, and it's a wonderful prelude to the holidays. In addition to that, our ice rink, I believe, is opening on November 25th. Mm-hmm. So we encourage people to take advantage of that as well. And John, did you have something?
Yeah, something I thought of. Last night at the Carson Water Subconservancy District, the executive director asked if we needed a presentation on the FEMA mapping.
He didn't know if he had given us one or so. If you do, just give him a call.
You know, I think that'd be a good idea. It would be nice to get kind of cut up on that. Right. So I'll get that set up with Ed.
Okay. Yes, go ahead.
And I just want to announce that on December 16th at 2:30 in the afternoon, we'll have the ribbon cutting for the greenhouse project. So public is invited.
Terrific. Wonderful. Okay, Molly, go ahead.
I attended the Golden Pinecone Award celebration last night, so I want to extend congratulations to our Open Space Advisory Committee. Juan Guzman did a wonderful job accepting the award last night, and it was a very nice event. And congratulations.
And his acceptance speech was coherent?
You know, he did. He slowed down. However, Juan makes it very entertaining. So, and again, he did that as well last night. But congratulations to them. It was an honor, and kudos.
Absolutely. Well, we have an exceptional staff. And with that, I want to wish everyone a happy Thanksgiving. All right, is there a motion to adjourn?
Public comment.
Is there a second? Yes, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Randy. I didn't mean to overlook you. Yes.
Got one more public comment.
Oh, you're absolutely right. Okay, because people have been so anxious to testify this morning. Is there any member of the public, specifically Maurice White, who would like to comment on anything under the board's purview? Okay, seeing no public comment, we'll close public comment. We have a motion to adjourn. Do we have a second? All those in favor? Any opposed? Thank you, everyone.